Hello and welcome to Interactive Distractions, episode number 361. My name is Christopher Kyo, and I'm here with Travis Baum.
Hello, everybody.
And Jeff Chorney.
What up,
everybody? And today, we are talking about the 20th anniversary of the PlayStation console.
It's a long time.
PlayStation 1. And because there's no way that we would actually come up with this idea.
No.
Joining us is Mr. MC Wilson. How you doing, MC?
I am doing great, guys.
Hey.
I'm on Endis.
It's been a long time coming, man. We've actually been like we've talked before. It's like, we need to get MC on the show. What can we do to get MC on the show? And when you threw this out, it was like, okay, yeah, let's do that. That sounds good. So, yeah, glad to have you, man. Welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us what's up? What's been going on the past couple weeks?
Thank you. It's great to be here. Well, you know, gentlemen, like you said, I've been a fan of yours for a long time, a fellow podcaster for a long time. But I've been away from gaming podcasting for a while. So here's a quick catch up. At the beginning of last year, I started a new podcast called Gaming Forward. You guys were on that.
We were.
And the idea with that show was going to be that it would focus not on where gaming was, but on where gaming was going. And what I learned from that was that where gaming was going was cold and dark and frightening. And there's really nothing of interest there for a guy like me. Plus, I'd taken a new job and I just had a kid.
Yes, so congratulations
that's
on
not
that.
A lot of responsibility.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. No. Yeah, you know, life continues. I am granted a significantly less interesting person now, but life continues. So thanks for not being daunted by that and inviting me on anyway. Longtime fan of you guys and your show, and it's an honor to finally be here.
Well, thanks, dude. Yeah. We're glad that you've been keeping up with us for this long. And Jeff and I were talking about the Genesis cast that we did with you. And that was, you know, it was a great time. So I'm glad that you were able to come on and, we'll get a chance to talk about the PlayStation. So,
It's going to be fun.
Before we finish up with that, let's see what else is going on. Travis, what's up, dude?
Hey, nothing much, dude. It has been a rough week for the T-Man.
Why is that?
Really? Long week. Yeah. It was just that extra responsibility with one of the bosses being out and handling project. You know, at the end of the day, it's just all about, you know, gritting your teeth, digging your feet deep in the dirt and just going at it and just do it. So, I mean, that's what we did. That's what we had to do. All of us in the office had a lot of extra responsibility. So, but like I said, end of the day, got done. It was just rough and very slow. but made it through and, expecting, a really, really positive, really good looking weekend, 3-day weekend off Monday. And a lot of Destiny in my future for sure. Maybe finally go see Avengers. I still haven't seen
Avengers?
That joint.
Dude, you
still
see.
Haven't seen
Come
it
on,
yet.
Come on, man. I have two kids. I've seen Avengers.
Yeah, I just haven't found the time. And most weekends, I mean, the last couple of weekends were pretty busy, but during the downtime, it's just been chilling out and relaxing as much as possible. So yeah,
all cool and all. You're shooting some e-ball, maybe?
Just chilling.
Outside
of the school.
Yeah.
A couple of guys, they were up to no good.
Wanted a podcast in my neighborhood.
Oh, nice. Cool.
So what's
going on?
Well, I did see the Avengers last weekend.
Oh, yeah? How was it? Was it great?
Yeah, it was good. We liked it. We had our long weekend last weekend. So
yeah.
I believe it was Sunday. We said, hey, let's go see the Avengers flick. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as the first one, but I thought it was really good.
I'm with you on that.
That's the general consensus. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I liked the first one better. And I'm not sure what it is about the first one that I liked better because I feel like there were more like little one-liners in this one as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really good. I just felt like the first one, it was missing something from the first one.
Maybe it was just like the whole thing with the whole team getting together and not really knowing each other. And that whole thing was just awesome and funny and great.
Yeah.
Whereas this one that is kind of like already been established, you still got the kind of banter going back between all of them, but it's just not really the same. And it was more action focused, I guess, the second
one. Yeah, this one was more action focused. The other one was more about learning the characters and the characters learning about each other and that kind of thing. So,
did they not juggle as well as the first one the ability to have this many heroes on screen without like saying, okay, well, we're mainly going to focus on like maybe three of them? Did they not
actually,
do that?
Actually, I thought they did a better job of that this week.
Yeah, they did.
Really?
And actually, and there's a few new ones in there too. So,
yeah.
You know, they did, I think they did really well with that.
Everybody gets their time to shine at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And actually, I'm not going to say anything about it, but Jeff, one of the things that Crystal and I were talking about is that we really liked the way it ended.
Yeah. And I like the ending too.
Yeah. We really liked that exit. So that was, you know, it was good to see how they're moving forward. So, but yeah, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It was a good movie for sure.
Yeah. Soon we'll do it soon.
On another note, Johnny and I bought a car this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
We pick it up.
It was
tomorrow.
Kind of an epic tale, right? I mean, you took what, a week to decide between two cars?
About a week to decide between two. We're originally going to go for three. We just by doing like online research and stuff, we narrowed it down to a Kia, a Hyundai, and a Honda. So Civic, Elantra, and Forte. And then we went and test drove them last Saturday. We started with the Civic, then the Elantra. Then after we did the Elantra, we're like, you know what? We're not going to bother with the Kia just because we love both these cars we've test driven. So we're just going to just stick with these. Like, cause the Forte is around like the same price. And just by looking at stuff online, I was kind of like, it would be third on my list anyway. So let's go between these two. And it took us forever.
Did you trade in the old car or
no?
Did
we're
you,
actually giving the old car two car. To, we're going to have two cars. We're giving one to, Tanya's sister to use like a beater car to get, cause she needs to go to and from the GO train station. And it was originally her car to begin with, but then she kind of gave it to us when Tanya's car broke down. So instead of keeping two cars, and plus, if we wanted two cars, I have to buy another parking spot in our parking garage.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much that would be. So,
I mean, if she doesn't want the car, I mean, I can take it off your hands for you.
You're going to go up to Canada and drive it down?
It's a POS. POS 19.
Would it make it from Canada to your house, Steve?
No, I doubt it. So yeah, we went back and forth for like so long on it, and then we finally decided to go with the Civic just on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. I think I went back there and I test drove it again, and then I talked to the guy, and I think we got a pretty good deal on it. He threw in some accessories and stuff like that, so we're pretty happy. And we said, all right, screw it, let's just go with the Civic. It's had more features. I like the interior better, and it's just got really good depreciation value. So
yeah,
it should be worth more.
And fixing cars like that are cheaper. Japanese-made cars are, any type of maintenance will be as minimal as possible compared to other cars.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we're picking that up tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to it. It's been very exciting. And that's pretty much it. I'm probably a little more excited than Tanya is, but even though she's the one who's going to be driving it more than I am. But
the guy is always more excited about the car than the girl. That's just the way it is.
She's the one who's going to be driving it to work and stuff. I'm going to be like,
you going to put some deuce deuces on there? Some spinners?
Some spinners. Oh, yeah.
Please
definitely.
No. Please
like
no.
Some race. You got to have like an Indus racing stripe. How about it? God.
We'll get vinyl Indus put across the side of the car.
I'm all about it.
Nope. That's it.
All right, this weekend,
we're just going to chill.
It's super busy for me this week, and it's going to be worse next week because, like Travis, my manager's going to be out next week and, you know, what's that?
I said party time.
No party time.
I thought it was going to be too. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's going to be so chill.
No. And the thing is, like, we have a lot of pieces in the project that they're working on right now. And there's a lot of handshakes between those pieces. So next week is going to be all about integration, and she's going to be out. So, which is not a big deal, really, but whatever would normally fall on her plate now falls on mine. So, which is fine. I actually welcome that because it's what I need to move forward. But it's going to be busy. It's going to be a busy week. And this week was a busy week, but it's been good. Let's see. This weekend, we actually have a couple birthday parties we're going to and things that MC has to look forward to. Kids' birthday parties. but so we're going to be doing some of that. But other than that, it's been normal stuff, you know, that right. And games.
Yeah.
Which we're going to get into right now. So let's start with MC. MC, what is distracting you lately, man?
I've heard about these video games.
These video games.
Yes, I'd like to tell you about one. I've been playing a fair bit of stuff over the past several months, so I'm just going to pick something out in particular that I want to focus on, and then I've got a couple of rants, if you don't mind, actually.
Oh, always welcome to rant, man. Always
all
welcome
right.
to rant.
So let's talk about Broken Age, man.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I know Travis played this, right?
I can chat it up with you.
All right, so you guys know Broken Age. Broken Age is the first point-and-click adventure game made by Double Fine.
Right.
Everybody's heard of this. Double Fine had a very high-profile Kickstarter success. That's been more than 3 years now. And they raised $3.3 million to make this game. They'd initially asked for $400,000 to make both the game and a documentary chronicling its creation. And turns out it's a good thing they raised as much money as they did, because this took them a lot longer to finish than they expected it would. But I'll get to all that about the creation in a minute, though. The game's out right now. Travis has been playing it. I finished it. You can play it on just about everything. On your PC, on your PS4, on your Vita, on your iPad. And I think you should play it, because it's got a lot to offer. Originally, the game was released in two parts. They came out with Act 1 about a year ago. And they just came out with the full game, including Act 2, a few weeks ago. And you can definitely see a difference between the two acts in regards to the feedback they got on Act 1 and how they took it to account.
So it seems like it's Act 2 is much better. A little more fleshed out, I guess.
You know what? This is a point-and-click adventure game. There's puzzles to solve. Some guy's got information that you need. He won't share it with you until you bring him an item, which you can only get from this other guy. But that guy won't help you until you figure out a way to stop his cats from exploding, that kind of thing. And you know, in Act 1, most of these puzzles weren't very challenging. And personally, I thought that was great. I admit that I spent my time with the game just focusing on the story, focusing on the incredibly gorgeous artwork, the hilarious dialogue, the great voice acting. I spent my time with it just exploring the world, going through every dialogue option, and generally just watching Tim Schafer do what he does best.
Sure.
And with Act 2, you can tell that they received some feedback that the puzzles weren't very difficult, so they added more puzzles, and some of them are pretty complicated. In my opinion, the implementations on those can be pretty suspect. You'll talk to folks who will give you diagrams that you need to solve another puzzle. And sometimes the diagrams are just wrong, and you have to go back to the original person and get another diagram. You'll work on one puzzle that requires you to make reference to an object that you found earlier, but it is possible to get to this puzzle at a point where you don't have access to that object anymore. So if you didn't pull out your phone and take a picture of it, you'd be in trouble.
Okay.
You know, that maybe is par for the course for people who really loved old school point and click adventure games. But for me, what it meant is that while Act 2 had all the stuff I liked about Act 1, it also added a bunch of frustration.
Yeah. See,
I don't know if that's been your experience.
That doesn't. See, I haven't touched Act 2 yet. That's the thing. I think I'm like right at the end of Act 1. So So I'll find out shortly, whenever I can peel myself away from Destiny. But you know, with Broken Age, the endearing stuff is still there. You know, the great voice acting. The story is interesting enough. You know, I found myself with both characters that I really dug them from the start. Especially the girl. I mean, she was like she kind of catches you from the start. You're surrounded by family, loved ones. She's in this really, really crazy situation that I think I shouldn't say, because just finding out on your own is rewarding of what they're preparing for. And so you're immediately hooked with both of these characters. So those endearing parts about the game, that's all there with Part 2. But it's, like I said, the puzzle thing is a thing that worries me. You know, they try to enhance those, spread them out, create this web of a puzzle-centric point-and-click game. And that worries me a little bit, because of the fact that I've been so indoctrinated by the Telltale game model, you know, the new evolution of the point-and-click series. And I'm worried that I will not like it at all, because there is a lot more of stop, figure this puzzle out, and I'm not used to that anymore.
Well, you know, they did set out to make a game like those old school adventure games, but modernized to some extent. Like the graphics obviously are cutting edge, and all of the presentation elements are just top notch. But people wanted that old school adventure gameplay, I suppose, and now they're getting it with the second half of Broken Age.
Okay.
Personally, I think that maybe not everybody is going to dig that. Maybe folks will be willing to deal with it. I certainly hope, though, that anyone who's listening to me talk about the second half of this and thinking, try it anyway. You know, Broken Age, in general, I thought was a great experience. I finished the game. I've mentioned my frustrations with the second half, but I would really honestly recommend this game. You should see it. You should play it. If it seems like this isn't your kind of game, then follow a walkthrough. It'll keep you out of trouble. And you'll be able to enjoy the parts of the game that really, really work.
Yeah, I'll be hitting the walkthroughs up a lot probably for Part 2. So even the Part 1 puzzles, I'm like, ugh, here we go. So I don't know. I'm not a puzzle fan.
Now, here's the thing I really wanted to talk about this.
Sure.
I mentioned that they made a documentary about the making of this game. and it's called Double Fine Adventure. Have any of you guys seen any of this?
I think I might have seen the first initial parts of it, but that was it.
Okay, this thing is my
series, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a series of, it looks like it's going to be 20 episodes, and 19 of them are out right now. Yeah. And it is, this thing, in my opinion, is the best thing that has been made and released to the gaming public in the last 3 years.
Really?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
What's kind of the crux of it? Like, what keeps you
I'll tell you all about that. But first, let me say that you can buy this thing. It is for sale, but you can also watch all the episodes on YouTube for free. And yeah, I mentioned there's one more episode left before the documentary is complete. That one hasn't been released yet. If you're following along now, when they come out with the next episode, they're probably going to put it up on YouTube at about the same time. And as for why I recommend this documentary, I've got a lot to say about this. I recommend this documentary for so many reasons. The production values, the stories it tells, the joy of watching creative and talented people come together and build something. And I was able to relate to it on many levels. I know how hard it is to create something that is beautiful but impractical, and how good that it feels when you actually overcome those challenges and make it happen. And I empathized with those folks, I should say, every step of the way. But as a gamer, I think what I got most out of this was understanding, just pure solid understanding of why the gaming industry is where it is right now. We know that many of the gaming industry's problems stem from the fact that games are more expensive to build than they've ever been, that games often ship broken. We know it's because publishers had to get them to market by a certain time, and sometimes the games just weren't done by then. Double Fine Adventure will help show you why these games are so expensive in the first place, why they can take so long to complete. And for me, that was especially helpful as a guy who runs software development teams. Someone comes to me with some application they want me to build, right? They want to know how long it's going to take. And I can give them an estimate. It's an educated estimate. I get it mostly right. But sometimes I get it a little wrong, and that's because you can't accurately estimate how long it's going to take you to come up with a good idea. Now, games are software, sure, but they're not software in the same way that I know software. There's so much art involved. And for a game like Broken Age, the process of creating and iterating upon art resources, that's a huge part of development. Every time you hear a news story about a game shipping late or missing features, there's always some half-cocked 20-something asshole that comes in and starts yelling about how this would never have happened if they had properly scrummed their agile sprints in the cloud or some shit. Then you watch Double Fine Adventure and you realize that the process of making games is just not the same as making other software, and you can't apply the same metrics to it. Take a look around the industry. You'll see how major publishers are responding to this challenge. Oh, it takes a long time to fully realize a beautiful imaginary world? In that case, you're only ever making games that take place in cities that actually exist. The Double Fine Kickstarter gave them an opportunity to try getting away from that, and through this documentary, you get to see the struggles that they had. You see the joy at the beginning, you see the fear when they run out of money, you see the anguish when they have to lay people off, and above all, what you see about it is this studio that makes me want to support everything that they do, doing what they do best. This documentary is really long, like I said. There's 19 episodes of it right now, and some of those are an hour long. It's incredible. I would recommend setting aside
time for this
documentary.
I've heard it's gotten some flack by other publishers and stuff. Not like flack, but they kind of, because they're so candid, some other people are kind of upset at that.
So they're like just kind of sit, like they're laying out just how the industry is, basically, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like this stuff is, it's not like they have an agreement to all come together and not reveal any information about how they do this.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, the real secret behind the way they make their games is they hire incredibly smart, hardworking people, and you know that's hard to do. It's not like just telling other people that that's what you need to do is going to make them any more successful at doing it. Anyway, I feel really strongly about this thing. I think that it's a better investment of your time than probably any of the games that have come out in a few years. at least it was for me.
Yeah, I'm actually particularly interested in this now because, you know, the thing that got me into the IT field was the fact that I wanted to make games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've kind of put that on the back burner, like, yeah, I don't think that's for me anymore. And now this, you know, watching this documentary, it may give me that, might give me that, 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 that sense of security that I made the right choice, you know?
Yeah, I was gonna
say. Chris, I say don't cut yourself short, man. You should follow your dreams.
Okay, and I'll sleep at offices and ruin my relationship with my family. And
no, they're fine. They'll be fine. Just get a loan. Just get a loan. It's easy. It's super easy.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do.
Ask Jeff. Thanks for just passing them out like hamburgers.
It's got
man.
A new
like,
one, so
it's got a new one.
Yeah, Jeff knows firsthand. Oh, it's free loan.
I mean, it's not like they're hiding any of the hardships that they've dealt with, but at the same time. When you talk about, like, you'd made the decision not to go into the gaming industry, same deal here, right? Like, I could have done it, you could have done it, we both chose not to do it. And a lot of that we feel reinforced every time another article pops up on Kotaku about what a terrible industry this is.
Yeah, and people getting laid off left and right, and
Right, and you watch this thing, and these people, like, even though they are dealing with so many problems, they have dreams, and they're working with incredibly talented people to make those things a reality, and it's hard not to feel a little envious.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but I think it's also that's a one-off. Well, not a one-off. I'm not saying it's, like, the exception, not the norm, but it also depends on where you work, how your management works, how the whole company as a whole views it. Because I know a few developers... Or not, I shouldn't say developers, like programmers stuff that were in the game industry, and none of them are doing that now. They got out and they said, fuck it. I can't do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah, you said Rudd's kind of a special place.
Yeah, he doesn't do it anymore, right? No, he does his own shit now. He does like freelancing stuff.
Yeah.
He's making a lot more money doing it. He's got way better hours. And yeah, he's like, it's honestly not. He's like, if you're not on like one of the upper tier, like designers or developers or like a lead, it's almost like sweatshop work.
Wow.
So he's like, yeah.
Other than that, I've got a couple of rants. I'm gonna borrow something here that Jeff used to do, Dear X.
Oh God, yeah, right. We haven't done that.
Bringing
in a long
back.
Time.
It's been a while.
All right, so I got two Dear X's here. Dear virtual reality game developers,
super excited for this.
you guys are charting new territory. You're trying to figure out how consumers are going to respond to something that's completely new, something that asks a lot of them. A consumer who buys into VR is not just spending a lot of money. She's also allocating a lot of space in her home for IR trackers and such. She's risking having family members and friends feeling alienated. That's a big ask. So you, the developers, you feel that pressure. You know the world is watching, hoping that you're going to be the ones to deliver that killer app, the one that's going to convince consumers to look past all that and give VR a shot. Here's what I want to know. Why is it that so many of you feel that the way to win over consumers is to scare the shit out of them? Yeah. Whenever I hear some developer waxing poetic about trying the new Rift or the Vive or the Morpheus, it's always the same kind of thing. I went to a demo. They were showing off a game and you're sinking into a dark trench and then a shark rushes at you and you get devoured. And then there was this other game where you were adrift in space and you're running out of oxygen. Ooh, here's one where you're walking down a dark corridor and you're being chased by a serial killer. Mm-hmm. You know what? I pulled that thing off my head and I said, never again. Future of gaming. Yeah. Let me tell you something. If I put anything on my head and it makes me feel like I'm adrift in outer space and I'm running out of oxygen, that thing is never going on my fucking head again. Well, no. I will spend money to convince other people not to buy it. How about this? Maybe spend a little more time working on creating experiences that might make people want to return. Then we can talk.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, one like, more here.
Like porn.
Let's just, yeah, I was going to say, that's all they have to do.
It's just a porn machine, right? Yeah, like it's literally what it is. Just give me
Dear
porn.
Dear game developers, I bought your game. I know who you are. I know what game I bought. I don't give a shit what engine it's using. When I load up the game... Please let me start playing the game.
Oh,
usually,
amen.
Smaller games and indie games get this pretty close to right, but lately it's becoming a problem even with these. I checked out a game on PSN called Super Mega Baseball the other day. When you start it up, you have to stare at the developer's logo for 20 seconds before you get to the title screen.
Well,
this sort of thing was never acceptable, but in an era where console games are being compared to mobile games and increasingly are found lacking, it's actually a major problem, and it needs to stop. The end.
At least let us click. So some companies are good with it. Some companies are good, and they let you click through the...
Yeah, start, and you go through it.
The other ones are loading stuff in the background, most likely.
That might be true, but still, it's like, I would rather see a loading screen. It's like these logos are
But I think the engine stuff
the
is by license, because a lot of them license the engine. I think it's in the... probably the paperwork that if they're licensing the engine, they have to probably have to have a header on the game for X amount of time.
I'm sure that's true. But there are also, you know, there are some games that have done it that do it in such a way where, like, the first time you load up the game, it goes through all the logos and you have to sit there and watch them. And then the next time you load it up, it recognizes that you've already seen them, so you can press start and get through them.
To be honest, I don't remember a game that's done that in a long time.
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while. But there are some out there that have. It's just that, you know, there's so many, you know, and there are some games that they flash like five or six logos on the screen before you ever get to the title screen. It's a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh.
What if a game comes out that's just title screens? Like, it's 28 title screens and then credits.
And then the credits are like 8,000 people.
And then you get a platinum trophy for sitting there.
I was saying, do I get the platy? Like, because if that's the case, I'll play, like, the sequels.
Part of the problem.
Part of the problem. That's right.
It's a platy. It's a $60 platinum, basically. It's what you're doing.
Well, that's all for me, guys.
All right, cool. Jeff, why don't you go next?
All right, well, I'm playing some more Mortal Kombat.
You still loving that?
Well, I've never really loved it.
We're still liking it.
Still playing it, yeah. Okay. We're still enjoying it. I'll put it that way. Okay. Street Fighter's out next week, so that might be like Mortal Kombat go bye-bye for a while.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to happen.
Yep. Dark Souls 2, I think I'm getting close to the end of the main game before the DLC, I think. I don't know, far. Travis, how far am I?
What's up? I'm not going to lie. I just blanked out for a second. What were you talking about?
Dark Souls 2.
Dark Souls. Oh, amazing game. I love it. What's your question?
I'm trying to think what the last boss we just beat was. The one before you fight, Vedric?
He's like, okay, so you're
walking around a circle with a big sword.
Yeah, he's walking back there. Yeah, you can antagonize him and fight him, but you don't fight him unless you have at least two
or souls.
You want souls of the giants. Yeah,
yeah, the red souls, right?
Yeah, you want at least two of those because that makes the fight a lot easier. Yeah. He's not hard at all. His attacks are slow. They all arc in front of him, so you have to do is like kind of stay on his side and just wail away at him.
Was that close?
You're pretty far. You have like one or two bosses left, and you're done.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. So, yeah, I'm enjoying that. I'm kind of getting a little bit fatigued on it, though. Like, used to look forward to playing it, like, every night as, like, co-oping through. And now I'm just kind of like, oh, I just want to kind of get to the end and be done with it.
Right.
Especially now, because I think we're pretty over-leveled for where we are. Like, we're, like, level 150-something.
Oh,
Yeah, and so, but then the guy I'm playing with, who is Craig on VG Evo, he doesn't listen. He's not going to hit us, but I tell him this all the time. He needs to go to look in every little nook and cranny for items and shit. I'm like, dude, there's not going to be any kind of item that's going to help us right now. Like, we are just blowing through this game. Like, the only time we're dying is when we do something really stupid. And then that's it. We like, I don't even think we've only died like in a couple bosses once. And like, that's true.
And now if you're looking to finish the game and then jump into a new game plus in the future, I mean, yeah, you want to kind of, you know, treat this with a completionist state of mind for
sure.
There
has been one item where I've been like, oh, that's going to be awesome now. If I was playing by myself, I'd be like, that would be very helpful in this situation. But because there's two of us, we're like, meh, I don't need that.
Yeah.
But it's just like, let's just go. But anyway, still kicking at it.
I did jump into it was a few weeks back, but I jumped into the DLC missions, and it's really cool.
How do you
open those? I'll have to remind you. There's a lot of crap. You got to go to different places. There's a place in the Shaded Woods that has a locked door, and you just take an item to it, but you got to find an item. So,
Jesus Christ,
okay. It's nuts. You would think it's a point and click adventure game. It's so ridiculous. But the DLC is cool.
How would I ever tell to put Mix the Fish with the router? That makes no sense.
There's a reason why some people like Demon Souls like the most out of all the Souls titles, including Bloodborne, only because of the fact that it was solely about you're in a difficult area, a well designed, really large built area, and it's just tough enemies being thrown at you, and that is at its core the origins of the Souls series. And with with Bloodborne and with Dark Souls 2 specifically, you get to a point where you're so over leveled that you are just wailing through most of the enemies in there, but they throw in these differences in the stage to where like someone will be ringing a bell, and when they do that, don't get out, you're dead. So the stage starts fighting against you, so to speak, And with the DLC, that kind of goes away and they go back to their roots. And it's very, very, very welcome, second addition to Dark Souls 2, because mm-hmm. they focus on great set design and really tough enemies. So the DLC is phenomenal. So before you beat the game, I would recommend trying that out before.
Oh, you should do that before you beat it. Okay, so you can't. Yeah. If you beat the game, you can't do. You have to do the new.
You may be able to go into it, you know, once after you beat the game.
Yeah,
but you can jump into
it before I beat the game.
And you're leveled well enough for it. So I would try either of the DLC.
All right, cool.
Either of the DLC, yeah, for sure.
Awesome. The other game I'm playing, I cracked and picked it up when I was gonna originally wait until a couple weeks, but I picked up Witcher 3.
Ah.
Also known as the windiest world in the universe. Have you guys played this at all?
I bought it. I haven't played it yet.
That game.
I'm holding off a couple weeks.
Every time you're outside, every tree, everyone's hair, everything is blowing like there's like a crazy monsoon, typhoon, hurricane coming or something.
Is it heroic wind where it's like, yeah. You gotta stand up, but like a Geralt puts his hands on his hips, and his hair's like blowing
in the
background.
Flowing in the wind, yeah. And there's trees waving, but it's like constant, like it doesn't stop. And it's like inside. When you're inside, you can see the trees waving outside of the windows. But I haven't put too much time into it. I can't really comment too much on the game. I'm only about 3 hours in, which is basically the tutorial plus a few side missions and like two main missions.
Okay.
It looks really pretty. I hope they cap the frame rate at 30, because all this like uncapped thing is, it makes it look weird at times, because it can get as high as like 45 frames, but then when it drops to even like 35 or 30 or even like 25, it just mm-hmm. makes some really, like not slow down. It kind of sometimes in battle, it kind of looks like your character is kind of skipping frames, even though the speed is still the same, if that makes sense. Like, we'll see there's kind of, like, gaps.
Jeff, how far are you in this? Like, about how much time have you invested in Witcher so far?
About 3 hours, I'm guessing.
Okay, yeah.
You know, last week, Jason talked about Witcher, and he'd play about 2 hours. And then on the Bombcast that same week, Gerstmann had played it about 3 hours. And both of them seemed to have negative impressions. But I listened to Bombcast this week, and Jason seemed much more bullish on the game. So yeah, maybe I wonder if it just doesn't leave the greatest impression. You tend to focus on some of the technical stuff, but then as you get into it, it just
I know
that would be pretty common.
Jason had a lot of problems because his cache was full mm-hmm. on his thing. So when he cleared that out, his technical issues were kind of gone. Because like I remember he was telling me about the console, which is like how bad like they're running. I'm like, I don't think it's running bad. It's just because like as far as I know, the console versions, or at least the Xbox One version, doesn't have a cap on the frame rate.
Right.
So it's not
right.
capped at 30, but it goes up to as high as like 45. So it might be 30 and it might reach an area where it's like, oh, it can handle like 40 here, 45. And then you start going to a battle and it drops to still 30. So it's still like a smooth frame rate, but because there's that drop and this goes both ways when it goes up and down.
Yeah. It makes it look hitchy.
Yeah. It looks kind of hitchy in a weird way. It doesn't happen often enough to really be like, this game is unplayable, because it's definitely not. It's just, you just notice it in places. You're like, oh, that's weird.
I think they are going to lock it at 30. I think that's one of the things they're doing in the patch. It's like, from what I understand, there's a patch coming that's going to further improve, and then it's also going to cap at 30 for Xbox, I think.
I hope so, yeah. Because I think the PS4 one already is capped at 30.
Yeah, it's capped at 30. Yeah. It stops.
Yeah, they're doing like the Infamous thing. And I didn't really notice it in Infamous when I played that, because I know they put a patch for that at 2 to cap it at 30. But to be honest, I think just because the way the combat is in Infamous Second Son, it's not a type of combat where you'd really feel it. So I never really noticed it. But with The Witcher, it's kind of like there's more strict timing involved and stuff like that. So it's kind of, you kind of notice it here and there. But I'm liking it so far. I mean, it seems really big, which is a bad thing for me sometimes. I might get overwhelmed and like a couple weeks be like, yeah, I'm done with that game. I just don't know what to do. And plus, Batman will be out soon.
So. Oh, that's right. Man.
Well, a month. That's why I got The Witcher, because I'm like, I have a month to play The Witcher. I want to kind of, you know, keep at it. But I can't really go into any of you guys any questions or anything about it, but it's...
No, I bought it. I'm gonna put some time into it, hopefully this weekend. So
all I can say is it's really pretty. And I don't know, like, I've been reading forum shit and people are like, oh man, those console ones look ugly. And you know what? Those people, I don't know what's wrong with them, or they're just trolling or whatnot, because that is a beautiful ass, beautiful game. Like, that is, like, I don't care if it's, like, equivalent to what High is on PC, then that is damn good looking High on PC, too. Like, it looks really good.
Well, you know, Jeff, I mean, PC Master Race, you just gotta know.
No, of course, yeah, I should know that, actually.
You should know that. It's PC or Master Race.
But I like how much was that card that Jason got?
Oh man. Several hundred.
Yeah.
Like, above 500, I think.
Jesus. But it's a decent card, yeah. Which apparently
the
Witcher
that was a top-of-the-line card, Jeff. That was like, one of the best you could get at the time.
Really?
So, yeah. He dropped some...
fuck himself.
He dropped some cash on that sucker, so...
No wonder he's playing everything on PC.
Right.
I'm trying to think. There's anything specific I want to talk about. They have a really good tutorial this time now, which they didn't have in 2. Well, they patched one in like 6 months later. By that time, most people have already played it. And then by the time it came out on 360, I tried, because it was free on PS Plus a while back, I tried playing the tutorial, and it was just, I couldn't do it. It was just kind of boring. This one's actually pretty decent. I do have one complaint, though, and I hope they patch this. The text, at least on Xbox One, is small for some of the item descriptions and stuff like that. It's hard to read if you're sitting, like... I have a 48-inch TV, and I'm sitting probably 5 feet back?
Whoa.
Like that, 5 or 6. It's okay. It's like, you know, well, you're supposed to be around that size, and it's pretty hard to read. It's very small.
Wow.
So I've seen other people make the same comments. I'm hoping that's something they do for their next patch. Because these guys are awesome. Did you buy it on disc, Chris?
Yes.
Did you open it yet?
Yes. There's like big ass manual in it.
Did you read the slip, the red slip in it?
No, I didn't.
You should go read that. Grab that. Are you close to your games right now?
No, not right now.
Oh, I was going to say you should go grab it and read it. Because those guys
Well, what does it say?
It basically says, like, hey, thanks for purchasing our game. We know you've spent your hard earned money on making or on buying something that we create or whatever. And thank you so much. And then it goes on to say that there's going to provide like 16 free DLC packs for anyone who bought the game. That's what you're going to get or whatever. And yeah, it's just really cool. They're just very grateful that people are buying it. Like, this is awesome. And
yeah,
hear about what they said about their people have been pirating their game. And they basically informed. They're like, you guys are pirating it. We understand, but we're still going to support it. So if you guys want to donate money, you know, you already have the game, obviously, but if you want to donate anything, you can donate here, but we are still going to support, even though we know your games are pirated. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, that's one of the reasons they're so successful, is because how they treat the consumers. Like, people understand that they're treating consumers unlike any other developer out there. And they did the same thing with Witcher 2. They put it out, and it's like, oh yeah, we're not going to charge you for any of the DLC.
And there's
going to
be no DRM either.
Yeah, no DRM or anything. And, you know, and now they're signed up to do, Cyberpunk or whatever it is, the
one
that's coming.
One.
Can't wait to see that. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to really
be
looking forward to that. So, but yeah, they're pretty cool.
All right, that's it. Those are the main ones.
Cool. All right, Travis.
I hear
there's
you
only
got
one
a new
game.
House.
a new
you
house.
You already got a new game.
Tell me about this house you keep your wolves in.
There's lots of wolves.
Oh yeah,
The den of puppies.
Yeah.
That's what Destructoid put in their review.
Yeah.
It said Den
I mean,
of Puppies.
Chris,
I was like, oh,
the only
rough.
Thing I have is Destiny. So do you have anything before Destiny?
I have something after Destiny. Quickly.
You have something after Destiny. So. Okay, so Destiny. House of Wolves is so good. It's so good. I took a week off. Not a week. I'm like a
took
month
like 2 months
off,
dude. Like show up, play one Nightfall. Oh, I didn't get anything. Fuck this game and log off.
Well, I needed to play catch up on some smaller titles. So, but you know, I took some time off, and you know, it's refreshing to go back. But I do believe this is so good that even if I didn't, it would have been a snap of the fingers, immediate refresh for me, even without taking a break. You know, They completely tricked me. When they announced no raid, I was like, I didn't have the season pass. I was considering not even buying it. But the things that they've done, you know, with the, you know, you can call it horde mode all you want, but there's just something that a lot of horde mode games, I mean, you know,
see,
maybe
I,
like, you know,
I
Halo
don't even call
being,
it horde
Halo.
Mode anymore.
It's not, well,
it's an
yeah,
arena
it's,
mode. It's an arena
it
mode.
It is. Yeah. And it's really, really great because every week it's going to change up and it's going to be different. you know, different modifiers, different debuffs, different boss sections. I mean, so it's going to change up and that'll, we have a couple of people that are questioning whether or not it's going to be different enough week to week, but you know, we were playing a raid that was not different at all and we never stopped playing that. So I think it's going to, the Prison of Elders section of the expansion is going to have the same, if not even more legs than the raids did. So, you know, so we'll stick with Prison of Elders right now because that's all that Chris has played. But I mean, Chris, I think you share most of everyone's excitement that this is something fresh, something new.
I don't have enough of an opinion yet because I've only played the 28 and the 32. So right. The one thing about, for those that don't know, the one thing about the Prison of Elders is that the way they did it is they have a match made level 28 one so that anybody can go in there with. Then there's three others. There's 32, 34, and 35. 35 will always be the same. That's basically your raid for this expansion or DLC. It's not a fucking expansion. Mm-hmm. I need to stop saying that. The other two, the 32 and the 34, are challenge modes, and they will switch up every week. I've done the 28 on two of my characters, and I've done the 32 on two of my characters. I enjoyed it. It does get a little crazy. I have not played the 34 one, so I really want to get some of that under my belt before I make an actual opinion. But I was actually going to talk about more about the story missions and how much of an improvement they were over the previous DLC.
Yeah.
And the reason is because number one, there's more. Number two, I feel like there's more personality in the people that are talking to you. It's still not enough for me. I still think they have a lot of work to do. You know, they're still hide everything in the grimoire cards. It's like there's so much that's left out that they want you to go to, the website or to the app and look at. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I want you to tell me about this stuff here. But the banter between the queen's girl, the chick that reports to the queen, I can't remember her name.
Petra or something.
Petra
like that, yeah.
And Varix, like the banter between them and some of the missions is really cool. And, one of the things that really got me is the new environments. There's a lot more new locations in this particular DLC, especially the last two. Well, the last one, the second to last mission, you actually go into one of the raid areas, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah.
Especially for people that haven't run the raids because they're getting to see this new area that's always been there, but they've always been, it's been behind a wall that they couldn't really access. And then the new area that is the last mission is just
completely spectacular. Yeah. It's fantastic. And it's one of the only missions that, you know, we've played through, you know, in the history of Destiny, two quote unquote final levels of the storyline. And none of them felt like that. Like they never truly felt like the end of the story missions.
Yeah.
But this one does. Like the House of Wolves final mission, it's epic to a point. I mean, there are things happening all around you. You're, you know, way high up in the sky on a different planet and it's exhilarating. And the final boss is pretty fun.
And he's not a bullet sponge. Which
no, not at all. Not at all.
I mean he takes a lot of shots, but it's I think it's less than the bosses from the other two, and it just, in my opinion, is just handled better. It's a better setup. It's a better area that you walk into, and I like and the way they explain how everything is going on, like between the wolves and what they're trying to do at the end, is just really, really cool. So I hope that they learn from that. It seems like they're continuing to learn and take the right steps. I just hope that when the new content comes out in September, that they take everything they've learned and then they just get rid of Grimoire or put it in the game somewhere and just get rid of that separation. Cause that separation is killing them and that stuff needs to be together. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good. And I played a lot of Trials of Osiris. I'm not going to get too deep into what it is. It's just your basic multiplayer mode and everything like that, but I want to talk about it more when Chris has had a chance to play it. So maybe over this weekend or before we record next time, we'll definitely have some time in that. But I want to talk. I will say that it's very, very good. I have not enjoyed very much of the Crucible in Destiny whatsoever, and this is by far the best and for me the only mode for Crucible that I will play on a consistent to semi-consistent level or basis. It is a lot of fun. It's not very difficult to get the good gear out of it. Like I said, I didn't want to get too deep in it, but it's a different match.
I'm just curious what the difference
is. It's a different match type. It's 3v3.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, when you die, usually you can, you know, revive yourself after about 10 seconds, but there are no revives, no self revives. The only person that could revive you is another teammate. There are no long rounds, and that's what makes it so fun, because normal Crucible matches, especially if you're losing, you still have to wait about 10 minutes for the match
to end. Yeah,
they're way too long. Okay, this one match consists of 5 rounds. Ten rounds. The first to, nine rounds. The first to ten, the 5 wins. So you're fighting, going back and forth, tit for tat, to get win number 5 to win the match and move on. So, you know, like I said, basically you can't revive yourself, but other people can. But if your entire team is killed, end of that round. And the rounds are only like a minute and a half long, so it's really, 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 really quick. You have a lot of time to, okay, the match is over, let's regroup, let's think of another plan, let's go this way, let's go that way. So, you know, obviously communication is key. You know, for good reason they didn't add matchmaking to this, because, I mean, you have to be not just in constant contact with people, you have to know how the other people play. You have to kind of gel, because our first two matches, we lost, because we weren't used to each other. But after, you know, match number 3, and we started kind of picking it up and everything, getting, you know, learning how to play off of each other, it worked phenomenally. So what happens is, that's the match type, and when you start your Trials of Osiris, you have to purchase an item, and that kind of begins your scorecard. And on your scorecard, it lists up to possible 3 losses or 9 wins. And your goal, the ultimate goal, is to get 9 wins, no losses. That'll give you the ultimate loot, the ultimate treasure. If you get 3 losses, however many wins, that's the that kind of registers your maximum reward. And you get rewards starting at 3 wins, up to 4, 5, 6, all the way up to 9. But it is, just because the match type is so different and much quicker and faster pace, it makes for a much, much better Crucible experience. I'm extremely, extremly ADD. And even though I'm playing a first-person shooter, and it's very Twitch, and you're constantly having to light it, I still get tired of doing the same thing over and over again. You know?
But
so,
you can't. How many times have you done the raid?
Not as many as me.
With the raid being a cooperative experience, it's the same issue.
Yeah, it's a little bit less.
The Crucible, I have the same issue that I have now with like Call of Duty.
Yeah.
I just can't run around, you know, shooting at other humanly controlled characters for 10 minutes straight. I just can't do it. There's no, and especially since the rewards in the Crucible in the past have been abysmal. Yeah. Like, there's no logic to it. It's completely random. So the juice is never worth the squeeze, hardly ever worth the squeeze for the Crucible. But this makes it something, because, you know, you can still get random drops after each match, but you know that the more wins you get, the better opportunities you're going to have for better loot or better items to, you know, upgrade armor or upgrade your weapons and everything to get you closer to that level 34 cap. Which we did. I mean, we wouldn't have hit level 34 if we didn't do Trials of Osiris today. We got the unique chest piece that was available to purchase with 5 wins, and an extra etheric light for 6 wins. And we were able to get to the level cap right there. So, I mean, it was really fun, really rewarding. You know, we did okay. We got 7 wins, 3 losses. That's pretty good for your first shot, but by no means we thought for a second that we were going to be able to level up to the max level just by playing that for, you know, 45 minutes, 30 minutes. So, it was a good time. So, Chris, we'll definitely play with you more. I mean, you can run it over and over again as much as you want throughout the weekend, because it's only available from Friday to the reset on Tuesday.
Right.
So, I think you'll dig it, man. It's really fun.
All right. We'll see.
Yeah. But that's it for me, y'all. That's it. A little bit of Mass Effect, but not too much. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, the only thing I'm going to add is that I've done it. I did it again.
What'd you do?
Done.
What'd you do?
I did it again.
What did you do?
I started playing.
What you did.
What did I do?
I'm guessing because of the hype of a certain Kickstarter, you got back into something.
I did.
Oh, you played Symphony, huh?
I started playing Symphony again.
You sandbagging son of a bitch.
I can't stop. I can't stop. This is like the eighth or ninth time I've played this game. And it's like, this game is just, it's like, it, and it holds up. It's like, I'm playing the PSP version. I'm playing the PS1 version on my Vita. I still love playing this game. It still holds up.
It's still fun. The gameplay is fantastic.
The gameplay is flawless. I mean, it's
the music is still amazing.
The music is still some of the best in gaming in general.
Yeah.
And I find myself just walking over and it's like okay, what am I doing right now? I'm not doing anything. Let me grab my Vita. Okay, let's play some more Symphony. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm playing Symphony again. I can't believe it. I've played it so many times, but why do I love this game so much? I don't know. Because it's awesome. That's why.
It is awesome.
But yeah, I started playing Symphony of the Night again. I haven't gotten that far into it, I don't think, but I've gotten through like the first two bosses. So I'm still kind of early on. I only started playing it earlier this week, but man, it brings back so many good memories of in general, PS1, just Castlevania in general.
Foreshadowing.
And, I'm so glad that I picked it up again. And the thing was, it's like, I didn't even think I was going to get a chance to, because I was like, all right, if I'm going to play Symphony of the Night, I want to play it on my Vita. That's where I will feel like I want to play it. And I'm looking through my download list and I've got to have some way to download Symphony of the Night on here. I have to have gotten this at one point or another. And turns out I did purchase the PS1 version for download. And I was kind of hoping that I had the digital version of the Dracula X Chronicles, but I don't.
Oh, no.
I only have the physical version.
That is just the craziest thing to me, that there is a separate version of Symphony that they completely retranslated and did a new voice acting for everything.
And then they added
and
Maria.
And the only way to play it is as a bonus item in Dracula X Chronicles.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, but that's the thing. That's how they sold that. They were like, oh yeah, you will unlock Symphony of the Night. You know, I mean, that's part of the selling point. It's like, we have a new revamped Symphony of the Night, and they added, you know, they added Maria, and Maria was in the Saturn version, but her moveset, her moveset in Dracula X Chronicles is completely different and so much better. So, yeah, I'm actually, right now that we're talking about it, I'm like, maybe I should just go buy the digital version of Dracula X Chronicles and download just start over. Like, I mean, I'm not that far. I can start over again, right?
Yeah. Well, you've already done it 8 times, so what the hell?
Yeah, what the fuck? Who cares?
Yeah.
But did you see that, that Devs Play video that Double Fine put up, where it's like a 2-hour video where they're playing through the game along with Igarashi, and he's just kind of dropping trivia bombs all over the place.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm
like there's a bunch of them. I can't remember them all, but one of my favorites is that, like it gets to that scene near the beginning where he meets Death and Death takes all his stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, he said, you know, actually the people who did the voice acting for this, the English voice acting, they sent it to us. And during this scene, when all his stuff gets taken away, Alucard just yells, no, not my stuff.
That would have been awesome.
It would, you know, and what? It oh so God, would have fit have with the awesome. Rest of the game. It so yeah. would have fit with the rest of the game.
And they said, do you have anything you can do to replace this? I said, well, we can put this what sound effect in there. So that's what they did instead.
What?
Not my stuff.
I think they made the right choice on that one.
No, I think they made the wrong one. That would have been awesome.
I will say this. The voice acting in the version that's on Dracula X Chronicles is significantly better. It's still not
that's
great.
That's not saying much.
I know. It's really not. It's like still not great, but it's significantly better.
That Resident Evil, which are the worst in the history.
Oh, man.
That Resident Evil one, man. I still
stop. Don't open that door.
That door.
Barry. Where's Barry?
Where's Barry?
Blood.
I hope it's
and
nice.
You, Jill, Chris's the blood. Master of lockpicking.
Yeah. Master of unlocking.
Master of unlocking.
Master of unlocking. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They really
I don't know, guys. I'm pretty good at unlocking doors, too. I'm not saying that Jill
isn't.
Because
usually when you're unlocking it, you have the key.
You have the key, right.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I do it literally every day.
Every day, yeah.
Multiple times, mostly.
It's not that difficult. Jill, I mean, you're a badass, but come on.
All right, let's move on to news. We're going to kill it. Jason's going to kill us. He's like, wait, and they're like, where are you guys? I ran out of pizza fingers.
Oh, but yeah, Symphony of the Night. It's so good. All right, so I only got two news stories for this week.
Perfect.
Drop it.
The first one is something that I know that Jason and Jeff will be very happy about. That is the fact that licensed sticks for the PS3, licensed Street Fighter sticks for PS3 will work on PS4 for Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Yes!
That is really, really good news.
Hallelujah!
And it's even better news because if they did it for that, they can do it for Street Fighter 5.
Yes, that's what I'm going for.
So, I mean, that just makes sense to me. So, they did the right thing here. But if these sticks don't work for Street Fighter 5, dick move. So.
But that would just mean, I wouldn't blame Sony for that though. Or Capcom. I'd probably blame Mad Catz because they need to sell their TE2 stick on PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that.
Yeah, I can see Mad Catz
being like, oh, shit. So, but let's keep our fingers crossed that it holds over for 5 as well.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is all using that driver that the Skullgirls people came up
with. It's exactly what
it is. Yeah, they mentioned that. They said that they got the driver working and was able to get it running on the PS4.
Mm-hmm. So,
good stuff there.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I have is some Bloodborne news. It seems that they have confirmed that there's going to be some DLC coming out later this year for all you Bloodborne fanatics.
Game of the year so far, 2015.
Yep. He says an expansion is coming. More info on that later this year. So not much to go on, but I would say probably expects more information at E3. Because with as popular as this game was, you can guarantee they're going to be pimping the fact that it sold so well and that it's a Sony exclusive.
Mm-hmm. I am so happy this game sold well.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, even though didn't get into it,
I think
that's
it sold really well,
issue.
But I think these people that actually stuck with it is probably a lot lower. That doesn't really matter in the long run. So
no, it doesn't. They still sold. They still sold their copies.
It had to have gained fame. So I am interested in how many people. I want to see sales.
Dark Souls 2. So
I want to see sales of Dark Souls 2. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like it had to have increased sales, right? Like had to.
Dark Souls. Dark Souls I would say it did because I know that you guys bought it because of Bloodborne, right?
I bought it for sure.
Well, Travis already had it anyway, but
yeah,
it'd be hard to tell.
No, he bought the PS4 one, didn't he?
Yeah, I got the PS4.
That's what I mean. He's already played it before. Like, I've never played a Dark Souls game outside of Demons.
And a buddy of mine at work, he got Bloodborne, and he ended up like he was like he's not done with Bloodborne yet, and he's like I'm looking at Dark Souls now, and I'm like that's pretty common. I said Jeff and Travis did the same thing.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So I really like. I'm really liking Bloodborne. I mean,
Dark Souls 2
as well.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping for a Dark Souls 3 at E3. That'd be awesome.
That'd be great.
I would not be surprised. Maybe not at this year's E3, but I would bet that
this year's E3.
Something.
I want
It'll be this year's E3.
You think so? This year.
Because it'll be Namco. It won't be just FromSoft. They need to, I think they'll do it. Right. They'll do some type of trailer or something at one of them.
Namco has a hit.
Probably.
They need to cap.
Probably.
Too much. They're going to kill that goose.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe Demon Souls 2.
They could do that.
But Sony.
But I was going to say that stay with Sony. I don't think I don't think Namco is going to do that. They have to do it if it's Demon's Souls,
Yeah, if it's Demon's Souls, Sony would have to put it out.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think it'd be Dark Souls 3 before Demon's Souls 2.
Probably.
Yeah. Demon's Souls 2 would be cool.
As much as Bloodborne sold, I'm pretty sure Dark Souls 2 sold a lot more.
No?
Yeah.
I would say that's
all right.
Yeah. Three platforms versus one. It's just, do the math.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so I'm going to do this every week until it's done. Weekly update for Bloodstained. Bloodstained has 32,800 backers and is at $2.58 million. That's awesome.
Ooh, bucks.
And there are so many things that have been unlocked. Yeah, last week we talked about, I said that they got a classic mode, stretch goal. They reached that and now they've unlocked, they're showing six like mini stretch goals that are basically original 8-bit music for each of those stages that are in the classic mode.
That's really cool.
And the next major stretch goal is, it says Iga's biggest castle. So apparently he's going to try and get this to be the biggest map that he's done in a Vania game. So.
Oh, wow.
That's, okay. Pretty exciting. I'm more excited about this game than anything that I've played in years. So.
Well,
I bet you
stop playing Destiny.
Yes.
In 2017 or whenever this is.
Whatever I'm playing, Jeff, it will make me stop playing it. I promise.
All right.
They've also got a new backer tier where you can get David Hayter to record a message for you.
Yes, I was going to mention
Shut
that.
Up.
Yeah, they do. It's
How
called,
much is that joint
called?
Cost?
Play a Hayter. Play a Hayter. it says write a short message for David Hayter, the famed director, writer, and actor.
That's awesome.
Wolves, X-Men, and Metal Gear Solid, to record for you. One line. Your one line message will also be hidden in the final game sound test.
Oh, wait, so they actually got to the point where Hayter's going to do the voice acting now?
Oh, man, that, yeah. They got that the first day.
That was day one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Day one they got that. But yeah, that stretch goal was 850,000. So, yeah, they're well beyond that. Oh, now. It's awesome. Pretty awesome. But
I really do hope that this turns into an amazing game. I really do hope.
I really think it will. I mean,
I think it will too, and I will be super disappointed if it doesn't.
This could be really cool. Yeah. Like, seriously, man, I'm
stoked. All right, let's take a break, guys.
Yeah,
let's
do that.
A little change before we take a break. Travis is actually going to be dropping off, and Jason's going to be joining us for the second half of the show. And when we get back, we're going to talk about PlayStation, and then we'll do some new releases and talk about next week. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. It's time to wake up. And welcome back.
You're welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hey.
Today.
Anyone want to welcome me for the first time?
Oh, yeah, Jason. That's right.
Hey, Jason, come and join us.
Hi, guys.
Before we get started, Jason, what's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I think I talked about it a little bit last week, just gearing up for E3 stuff at work. I had an hour and a half meeting just talking about all the equipment that we need to bring for this. It's fun and it's scary, but I'm totally looking forward to it. I can't wait. It's going to be way different than any of my previous E3 experiences.
Yeah, because you guys are basically sitting on the sidelines this year, right?
Yeah, for the most part. And we were trying to come up with things to do during the day, like during the show, because most of our stuff is going to be at night. So like GameSpot is going to be doing their, all day coverage. And then at night, we're going to be doing a show where we kind of recap and then we bring in a bunch of guests and stuff. But during the day, we're like, I don't know.
Oh, during the day of the actual E3, not the press conferences, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we're just going to grab a bunch of like audio recorders and stuff and go out and try and get interviews with people, check out some games for once, which is completely foreign to me. At an
E3. What a weird thing to do. E3? Yeah.
Actually play games. Yeah. I think in the handful of E3s that I've been to, I've maybe spent like an hour playing games, and that's when I wasn't really supposed to. So it's going to be very different, very different.
Cool. I look forward to hearing about your experience next month.
Mm-hmm. You can check it out on our website.
Giantbomb.com. Hey. Cool. Yeah. Well, we are going to be talking about 20 years of PlayStation.
That's a lot of years.
That is a lot of years. And
there's some of our listeners that aren't that much older than 20 years.
I know.
That's scary.
Yeah. It's even scarier when I look back and I think, we'll get to this in a bit, but when I was looking through some of the notes that MC had, yeah, I was like, oh, wow, this is scary how old I am. But Jeff, did you want to say something before we move on?
Just the reason MC's here is because it was a few months back. He wanted to do a podcast on his show for the 20th anniversary. And we just never got around to just like, I think there's about five people I think he wanted on that one at the time. Five or might have even been six. I can't remember. But the scheduling just never worked out. So, months go by. And I was talking to Chris and Jason, and I was like, you know what? MC had a great idea to do this 20th anniversary show for PlayStation, but we didn't want to just have him on the show and just run the show with him on here as a guest. So that's why for this feature, we're kind of doing something different because he's going to be running the show. He's going to be basically running the feature, keeping us on track, cracking that whip when he needs to.
It's going to be bringing class to our
asses. Yes, exactly. I was going to say, this might be the most structured feature you guys have ever heard. So, and to the point, and probably will be done in a timely fashion. So no pressure, MC.
Not a problem. This is going to be fun, guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Show's yours, MC. Let's do it.
So we are here today, my friends, to discuss the PlayStation. It's hard to imagine a time when there was no PlayStation, but that time actually was 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Wow. We are old, gentlemen.
We need to set the stage, guys. You mentioned that some of your listeners may not have even been alive at that time. It's hard to imagine a time when Sony was not a major console player. So we're going to have to do a little table setting here. What was Sony doing back then? How did they originally get involved in the video game industry? They had a video game division called Sony ImageSoft. It was based out of California, and this was a game publisher. And they published some games for the NES, for the Super NES, Sega CD. They published this game Hook for the Sega CD. They made that. But for most of us in America, when we thought of Sony, we thought of big-ass electronics, like your enormous
23 players,
27-inch Trinitron television, or that disc man you carried around that skipped if you coughed on it.
Yep.
Nobody thought of Sony as a gaming company, except for Nintendo. Back in the late 80s, Ken Kutaragi was a hardware engineer at Sony. I don't know how, but somehow he got a hold of someone at Nintendo and convinced them to let him design the sound chip for the Super Famicom. He did this while working for Sony, and he didn't tell Sony. And when they found out, he would have been fired if the CEO of Sony had not recognized the potential of this sound chip. And I don't know about you folks, but the sound in the Super NES was what impressed me the most when I finally got my hands on it. Yeah. Well, Nintendo considered this to be a successful enough partnership that they started talking with Sony about something new. And you may recall that back in the 90s, back in the 80s in Japan, Nintendo had put this peripheral from the Famicom called the Disk System. Yep. It had a floppy disk drive. You could take these floppy disks to authorized retailers, use them to buy new games for the Famicom. Games would be loaded onto the disk. Now, there were a few problems with this, and the first one was the disks were rewritable. You could erase a disk and use it again. Not quite what Nintendo had in mind.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And the disks were not encrypted. Once you bought a game, you could copy it to another disk and it would still work. So even though there was a lot of interest in CD-ROM during the early 90s, Nintendo wanted to sit it out until Sony came to them and said, we've got the technology to prevent this piracy problem. Let's work together. And so they started working together on a console called the PlayStation that would bring the Super Famicom and CD-ROM together. You'd be able to play Super Famicom games on it. You could also play games on a CD-ROM format, sort of like how the Genesis and the Sega CD worked together. They made this deal back in 88, and by 91, Sony was hard at work on it. Rumors had been swirling about this new machine. It sounded awesome. Nintendo was going to be at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in 91, and they were going to talk about the PlayStation there. And the day finally comes, Nintendo of America president Howard Lincoln shows up for the conference. He steps onto the stage, and he announces that Nintendo is teaming up with Philips.
Mm-hmm.
Boo.
That was the first that Sony had heard of this. Yeah. What the hell happened to the PlayStation? Well, that fell through. We're going to throw out all the work and do something new.
But Sony didn't throw out the work.
Right. Nintendo did. Yeah, what happened? Well, it turns out that a short time before this, Nintendo's company chairman, Hiroshi Yamauchi, noted asshole, took a look at the original contract that they'd drawn up with Sony and noticed something about it he hadn't considered before, which was that for games released on CD, Sony had come up with the disc format that would be used. And the contract gave them full control over any and all of those games. Now, this was back in the days when Nintendo was doing a fair business, charging other companies big bucks for the right to make games for the Super Famicom.
Sorry for a sidebar
here.
And
for the seal of quality.
I need to make a sidebar here quick, but have you guys read Console Wars?
I have not.
You have? Oh, you guys should, outside of MCU, you guys should read that. It's like, just because it's kind of like the precursor to this kind of thing. It's the Sega, Nintendo, Genesis, Super Nintendo thing. It's pretty awesome. I recommend it. Pretty good stuff. Anyway.
Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, no problem. Thanks, man. It's a good book. Yeah, check it out. But yeah, Nintendo, they had quite a business going where they would have to manufacture anyone's games if they wanted those games to be on a Nintendo platform. No one else was allowed to do it. And now here they'd signed a contract with Sony that threatened to take that monopoly away. So Yamauchi just says, the hell with this, and he tears up the contract. And also, we're not going to tell Sony we did that. Now, we missed out on some potentially good games because of this. Some of them did come out in other forms. Squaresoft had been working on a game that was supposed to launch with this thing, a game that was eventually released here in a reduced form called Secret of Mana. When the PlayStation got canceled, they had to rework that game pretty substantially in a hurry. A lot of content got taken out. But even so, that game was my favorite game for a long, long time. Can you imagine what it might have been like if Yamauchi had not decided to read over that contract again?
The soundtrack on that
thing
would have
been awesome. I know Square was pissed. Yeah. Square was pissed off. There were some folks who say that the huge amount of work they had to do reworking Secret of Mana was one of the leading factors in their decision to jump ship later on. So that was the original PlayStation. Sony got burned pretty hardcore on that deal. And you might think that they would have said screw it to the whole gaming industry after that, but they didn't, actually. They wanted to talk to Sega. And Sega of America was really interested in teaming up with Sony for the successor to the Genesis. They'd done really well with the Genesis. They knew that CD-ROM technology would be the next big thing, and they were open to partnerships. But Sega of Japan was not open to the partnership. They said, Sony doesn't know anything about video games. besides, we've already got some ideas about what we're going to do with CD-ROM. So again, the PlayStation had nowhere to go. Sony even got sued by Nintendo over the PlayStation because they weren't going to give up on it. They said, we're going to keep on trucking with this thing. And Nintendo said, well, you can't call it the PlayStation. That's our name. And Sony said, well, okay, what we can do is we can take the space out of the name. It was PlayStation. Okay. So if they took the space out, then they could release it.
Suck it, Nintendo.
They've been working on this for a while too, with the idea that it was going to be the best system in the world for 2D games, for sprite based games. And then they saw Virtua Fighter.
Yep.
And they said, we have to start
over.
That's
irony.
We can't release a console that's designed to play these sprite based games. 3D graphics are the way of the future. Way of the future. So in 94, PlayStation, right at the end of 94, PlayStation came out in Japan. It was released here in 95. First video game console made by Sony represented their champion in what would become the fifth console generation. There are other players at stake here in the fifth console generation, and I'd like to hear if any of you guys were owners of any of these other systems, the 3DO, the Jaguar, the 32X, and the Saturn.
I had a Saturn. Yeah, and I had played the others because I was working at the game store at the time. I was working at Swap at the time. And I actually very much was interested in getting a 3DO for a very long time until the PlayStation came out. And then I was like, oh, fuck that thing.
I was like,
well, there's that. And the 3DO was also like $600.
Well, expensive. By that time, it had dropped in price. You could actually get one for $200 or $300 because the actual Panasonic one was around $400 when I started working at the store. And then they brought out the Gold Star version, which was even cheaper. Yeah. And then Panasonic re-released the 3DO with a flip top instead of a drawer. And that one, I think, came out at like $250, $300. So
it definitely, it got more affordable as time.
Yeah. And that's when it actually started breaking a little bit of ground. And that's when you started seeing some of the bigger games like Need for Speed came out, Star Control, the best version of Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
It was the Turbo
version. One of?
Yeah.
At the time. Yeah. Totally.
At the time.
Road Rash
was awesome.
Soundgarden, the actual real licensed music and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where 3DO started to break a little ground, and that's why I started getting interested in it, and then the PlayStation got announced. So,
see, I wasn't.
I've owned quite a few of those actually. Yeah, just mentioned the 3DO. Have not ever owned a Jaguar.
No,
I kind of wanted to get in on that 64-bit, strap it on the base to the top unit, making it 64-bit. That would have been awesome. What else was going on? Saturn. Actually, I had a friend who imported a Saturn. And I would go over to his house, play a shitload of import games. But I actually didn't own one until like much later in life, sadly. Hmm. But I was always, always a big Saturn dude. Like, big fan of that platform.
Me
too.
Saturn is such an interesting story. It's a really different story depending on what side of the Pacific you're on.
Oh, yeah.
In Japan, the PlayStation came out in early 94, early December 94. That was just 2 weeks after the Saturn. And the Saturn had arrived with really high hopes. The gamers over there, they'd been amazed in the arcades by Virtua Fighter and Virtua Racing. These were the first games of their kind that used 3D graphics. Primitive tech, but unlike anything that we've seen, stuff that definitely couldn't be done in the Genesis. When the Saturn launched in Japan, you could buy it along with a Saturn version of Virtua Fighter that was almost arcade perfect. So even though the PlayStation came out just a couple of weeks later, the Saturn by then already had a ton of momentum and just kept on selling in Japan. Now in E3 95, which was the very first E3, Sega of America president takes the stage and announces that the Saturn is going to be available in the States for $400.
When?
Yeah, when? How long do I have to wait for this?
And then a few hours later, the president of Sony comes out and says, hey, the PlayStation is going to be available for $100 less.
Yep.
That sounds familiar.
That does sound familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah. And not only that, but like you were saying, Jeff, Sega screwed up. They said, hey, guys, our system's available
right now.
It's in stores now. It's like, what? And that had never been done, and hasn't been done since.
It's in select retailers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Like, everywhere.
You could get it at Toys R Us, but Sega had not informed any of the other retailers.
No,
about
they
it.
Were
like,
pissed.
Like Best Buy, for example. And those retailers were so pissed that some of them stopped carrying Sega products.
When was the first time you guys read about PlayStation? I can't remember the first time I read about it or heard about it. I remember being on a plane. A family trip going somewhere, and I think it was Next Generation magazine. You guys remember that one? It's like one of the older ones.
Yes,
I think it was Next or one of those, and it was on the cover. And I remember like being all hyped because, like, again, I was a Sega dude, like, all the Master System, Genesis, and then Saturn. I was waiting to get my Saturn. I couldn't wait. And then looking at pictures of Toshinden, and I know it might be jumping ahead of, like, launch title, something that was, like, a launch title, but I remember in my head being like, that game looks so freaking good. There's no way it's going to look like that on console. like, I want my Virtual Fighter. And I remember, like, just resenting it because Sega was already kind of going into the dumps by the time the Saturn came out in terms of, like, sales and just market share and just kind of the whole minutia of what Sega meant. It was kind of, like, on a downward slope, at least in North America. And I remember being, like, because I didn't want to go with the Nintendo side because I really didn't like the Nintendo 64. Like, I just didn't. My buddy had one. I'm like, it's just, all the games look muddy and just
why is
gross.
It all blurry? What's with all this,
like,
fog?
Like, yeah, exactly. I'm like, what the hell? But I remember just, as much as I didn't like the idea of it at the time, I read that article over and over and over and over again. And at one time, I was just like, oh, please let the Saturn be this good, because it just, everything they showed was pretty good. And, like, these little, like, you know, remember magazines? That's when you saw the first games for the first time, was a magazine. You're like,
yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Awesome. I think EGM was where I got all my information about the PlayStation.
Nice.
The one last player in the fifth console generation is Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Just like you were talking about back then, Jeff, the Nintendo 64, we knew it was coming. And unlike with the others, the reason we knew it was coming was because they actually had a couple of games out in arcades by this time.
K.I. and Cruisin'.
Yeah, K.I. and Cruisin'.
Yep.
The Ultra Killer Instinct 64.
Had the message saying it was going to be out for the Ultra,
Ultra
64 game
console. That's right.
So between that and the huge market share that the Super Nintendo and the NES had, there were a lot of folks who were just going to wait on whatever Nintendo was going to have. Saturn could be amazing, PlayStation could be amazing, but there we're going to get the Ultra 64. So that's setting the stage, and the stage is set. Now it's 1995, N64 is not out here yet, but the PlayStation and the Saturn both are.
This is where it gets good.
Yeah. So let's go around the table, guys. Yeah. I want to hear from each of you. Where were you at this point in your life? Which console were you planning to get, and what did you think of the PlayStation at this point? So let's start with Jason, with you, actually.
So back in 95, I was still technically in high school, I guess. So I was going to graduate that year. Yeah, I'm pretty old. I don't recall having that dispensable of an income. I was certainly excited for the console.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was even more excited once I got my first demo disc for it. I don't know if you guys remember it, but there was a black disc. I think EB carried these things.
Okay.
And it had, like, a soundtrack on it, just a bunch of artists. But it also
had PlayStation,
like,
Underground.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Underground.
This is way before Underground. Okay. The release of the PlayStation. They released these to retailers, and they had the soundtrack on there. But on the box it said that, you know, once you get your PlayStation, you can check out all these cool demos. They weren't really demos; they were really just tech demos and stuff. But yeah, I was working at an EB at the time that was released, and I got to check that out, and that completely sold me on the system right there. Just seeing those dumb tech demos, being able to control that stupid T-Rex, and playing with all the, you know, the ball simulation physics and stuff, and I'm like, well,
yeah, you did.
I was not sold on, you know, this whole 3D thing because I don't think it looked all that.
But
great.
Those balls, love that.
Yeah, the ball, like all the physics stuff. It's like, this is all real time. This is fucking amazing. This really is the future of video games.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of a latecomer to the hype, I guess. But
you got a PlayStation before us. Oh, you said you can get a set until later. Okay, never mind. Yeah.
I was strictly a 2D guy. I think that's the fighting game stuff in me. But
gotcha.
That's where I was.
I was in a weird. I'm trying to think if. I don't really know what my timeline is exactly. I just know I did buy a Saturn from a friend of mine who wanted to sell it because he wanted money. So I bought that. I rented a PlayStation from my local Blockbuster because the deal was if I got a certain thing on my report card or whatever, my parents would rent me the PlayStation. So they rented it for me with Toshinden and Ridge Racer. So I haven't officially, like, bought one yet. I just kind of rented it, played Toshinden.
But this was at launch?
This was just after launch. So,
okay.
Like, within the first month that it came out, probably. And then I remember playing it and was blown away by Toshinden. I thought Toshinden was amazing at the time, by the way, because The only other 3D fighting game I played at that point was Virtual Fighter. And Tishina just looked, it had texture maps. Virtual Fighter didn't have that. Didn't get that till 2.
Right.
So it was like mind blowing. And then Ridge Racer looked that much better on console anyway than Daytona did on the Saturn. Cause the Saturn version of Daytona had a lot of problems. And Ridge Racer was pretty smooth. And I remember I lied to my parents that day about something that happened at school, and one of my teachers decided to call my house and talk to my parents. Mom's like, you son of a bitch. Liar. So I played for about an hour, and then she made me bring it to my friend's house and let him have a free rental of the PlayStation for the weekend. And I was like, I was so mad. I was like, so fuck you. And
what did we learn?
What did we learn? Yeah. But I still, at that time, I wasn't sold on it. I was still like, I love my Saturn. I love Children of the Atom and X-Men. This is great. Virtual Fighter's fine. It's totally fine. It's all right.
Man, yeah, Evan Ridge Racer. I could not believe when I first saw that game in the arcades. Mm-hmm. And then the idea that any console could get close to that.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah,
like,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Like, Saturn had the 2D stuff, like the 2D fighting games. That was like amazing. It's like, oh my God, this actually feels like the arcade game. And I thought there's no way to get those 3D fight, because the Virtual Fighter, the Saturn version of Virtual Fighter had issues, had a lot of flickering, like a lot, like it would just polygons would totally like flicker out, and there's a lot of like that was sort of like clipping, a lot of clipping, a lot of all that kind of stuff. It wasn't like the arcade, so I thought there's going to be a while. I thought it was going to be like the next generation reason we're getting those 3D arcade games at home. No, mm-hmm. PlayStation. I was so jealous when I played Ridge Racer, and I was like, this is like the arcade.
That was pretty damn close. Yeah. Like, there were a couple other, like arcade games that I was interested in, like Cyber Sled.
Oh, yeah.
I played a lot in the arcade.
Man.
And I heard that that was coming to the PlayStation. I'm like, oh, fuck. They're really trying to sell me on this super hard. And yeah, that, like I said, yeah, that was just another thing that was super interesting to me that steered me towards the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So, Chris, how about you? Where were you at this point in your life? Which console were you planning to get, and what did you think of the PlayStation at this
point? Well, I was in an interesting position at this point because I was in my first year of college. I'm a year older than Jason. So I was in my first year of college, and I was working at Swap. Well, Swap imported consoles as well. So we had the Saturn and the PlayStation months before they came out in America. So I was already playing them by the time it came out. So I had already been sold on it by the time it came out in America. I had already been sold. I was like, okay, I want this. Mm-hmm. I need to figure out a way to get it. And basically what I did is I sat back and I waited. And as soon as we got a used one in, once the American one came out, I nabbed it.
And
that's what I got. I got the PlayStation, and I got Twisted Metal and Loaded were my first two games.
You guys weren't scared at the time what type of franchises would be on it?
No,
I was like,
yeah, totally.
I was always burned by Saturn, like, cause they didn't get a lot of third party stuff that Nintendo got. So when Sony came into the mix, I was like, I thought they were going to be even worse. I was like, yeah, they got the Namco stuff, but at the beginning, that was pretty much it. And I was like, that was one of my worries.
Well,
like,
just that, but like when you thought about a newcomer to the market, mm-hmm. also being one that's involved in like consumer electronics,
mm-hmm.
and is new to games, it would be hard to say like, you know, I feel confident about this based on how Panasonic's 3DO and the Philips CDI did.
No,
yeah,
you're right.
There was a small part of me that was worried about that as well. Yeah. After seeing, you know, releases like that. They had no track record, you know, as far as like, you know, video games were concerned. I was impressed with the tech.
Yeah, the tech.
But it's like, let's see what they have for games. And I was such a huge RPG gamer at the time. It's kind of funny to think about, but yeah, that's like all that I played it. I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but eventually, yeah, there was a very
there's a certain thing that came out that a lot
publisher.
Of people jumped.
Yeah.
A lot of.
That's getting
for myself. In 95, I was not looking for a new game console. Chrono Trigger came out that year, man. Final Fantasy VI had come out the
year
before.
Shit, I didn't even
know. Yeah.
Okay.
As far as I was concerned, the Super NES was still going strong. I didn't want to give it up. Killer Instinct had been fun in the arcades, but there was a Super NES version of that too, and I played hours and hours of that.
On that black cartridge.
Mm-hmm. Killer Cuts. EGN was telling me that next-gen consoles were going to bring us games the likes of which we'd never seen before, but then they cited examples like Virtua Fighter. I'd seen Virtua Fighter. I wanted more Street Fighter.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if the N64 had come out and had some amazing games, that would be something that I'd want. But when the N64 actually did come out, one of my friends got one. I played it at his house, and I kind of hated it. I hated that controller. Absolutely hated it. Still do. And Super Mario 64, well, it was new and it was different and it was inventive, but fighting with the camera, that was a new kind of frustration for me back then. And at the time, I felt like I was giving up more than I gained compared to like Super Mario World or Yoshi's Island. Probably would have thought differently if I'd actually owned the system and spent enough time with the game to get used to the camera control.
And people who are listening over the now, years, sorry to interrupt, MC, this is before ahead. Dual analog existed. Just to keep that in check.
Yeah, PlayStation was a digital-only controller.
The first PlayStation controller didn't even have an analog stick. Just a D-pad and the buttons.
And when did the Saturn 3D controller come out? Was that before or after 64?
It was just before 64. Around the same time. I think 64 and Knights was around the same time.
Right.
So basically, because of all that and the fact that I didn't know anybody with a PlayStation or a Saturn, I was kind of thinking I might be done with gaming. At that point.
Fuck this shit.
But none of these consoles were going to wait around for me to figure out what I wanted to do. They had games coming out, lots of good stuff. And since we're here to talk about the PlayStation, let's go through some of the major games released for the PlayStation. We're going to go through these in chronological order. I've got a list of some games to mention here, some that are like technically noteworthy or historically noteworthy or noteworthy for me. But as we get to each of these years, like... talk about where these things fit in your own history with the system. So we're going to start with kind of an obscure one. Back in 95, this was the first year on the market in North America. There was a game called Jumping Flash.
I loved this
game. I played that at a demo, like a Babbage's or something like that.
Yeah, I played the Japanese version because it was one of the first games out in Japan. And it was very intriguing just because you were running around and you could jump so high up in the air and actually see like the entire area that you were playing on below you when you did that. It was just very, very cool.
In first person. With real time 3D graphics, totally new for a console game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incidentally, this was the first game that I played after I got my PlayStation modded.
Oh, really?
Like, around that time, I made a trip out to, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Actually, Sunnyvale, California, where MC's
my home
currently
town.
Residing. Yeah. I brought it to a local game shop. I brought my PlayStation with me, brought it to a local game shop and had them mod it. Mm-hmm. And they popped in Jumping Flash for me. And, you know, because that was not out in the States at that time. So I was super excited about that.
Jumping Flash is actually the first PS1 classic that I ever purchased for demo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nice. So as soon as it was available, it's like, oh, Jumping Flash. Okay, I'll buy that. So
that was a new thing too. It's not like you had greatest hits on the friggin' Super NES.
No.
It's like you could never wait for a game to get cheap.
That's right.
Sunnyvale Golfland is still there, by the way. Still going strong.
Is it really?
Lots of DDR machines now.
Yeah, I'm sure that's mostly what it is now. Yeah, Capcom used to be just a half mile away from there. But they moved up towards San Francisco now, so probably it used to be a hotbed for some of the Japanese arcade games. I love that place.
Another game from 95 was Rayman. This thing was actually originally designed for the Jaguar and ported to PS1, but it sold so well on the PS1. It is actually the best selling PS1 game of all time in Britain.
Really? I didn't know that.
Team for them, yeah.
I have never played the original, ever.
Really?
Yeah, the original is just a side-scrolling 2D game. Mm-hmm. It's still gorgeous, and at the time, it was also noteworthy that this game had CD-quality audio. I mean, you guys were Sega CD owners, so that was kind of old hat for you.
I didn't get Sega CD. My parents didn't let me. This is where I'm convinced my dad did research on shit or something, because I wasn't reading like video game mag, like I was reading EGM something like that, but they got me the Masters and they got me the Genesis. They refused to give me the CD or the 32X. And looking back, thank you.
They were probably right.
It worked out.
Anyway, I didn't have a Sega CD. I kind of wanted one, but
yeah, Rayman is absolutely gorgeous, and I love the sound in that. And like, I really wasn't that into platformers at the time, but they did such a good job with the 2D animation and sound and stuff. I love the shit out of that game. So good.
Yeah. And if you were just looking at platformers in the light of what had been there in the previous generation, this is, would look like one of the best examples of what you could possibly get.
Yeah, and it was so refreshing too, like, see, you know, because PlayStation was, you know, putting such a strong focus on 3D gaming, and you know, the Saturn had lots of great 2D stuff, but like this was the first like gorgeous 2D platformer, and they proved that they could, you know, bring that as well.
See, I was in the mindset of like a stall looks way better, or like what was that? Like, it came to PlayStation eventually. It was another 2D platformer that was like really colorful and bright. And it was an RPG.
I remember that.
Well, Rayman went to Saturn too.
Well, Rayman went to both, but I mean, like, I was in that mindset. Like, Astal was like gorgeous. I was like, that's like,
I played the heck out of that too.
And there was another RPG which
Rayman played better.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. But there was another. It was an RPG. So Jason, you might know what it is. It was a Sega Saturn RPG, hand drawn sprites. They were your three girls.
Beyond Oasis?
No, that was
Genesis. Oh, your three girls. Oh, yeah. Magic Knight Rayearth.
Yes, that's it. Magic Knight Rayearth. And I was like, God damn it, that's what it should be all about.
Yeah. And
that took forever to come to America.
Yeah,
it did. Yes, it did.
Yeah. But that's why I was like,
freaking working
design. But yeah, I know. That's the thing. It's like everything Working Designs ever did took forever to come to America.
Yeah.
Now, here's a couple of fighting games from the first year of PlayStation.
All right, I'm listening.
One of them went on to become successful.
One of them, not so much.
Yeah. But I remember when Battle Arena Toshinden was hot shit.
Yeah.
I have a special place in my heart for Toshinden.
I will argue to this day that's a better looking game than the first Tekken.
I would agree with that.
It doesn't
play as good.
It's not talking about gameplay, but...
Well, Sony thought this was going to be their answer to Virtua Fighter, and that was a game that was moving Saturns like crazy in Japan. And I remember that EGM used to talk up this game so hard, to the extent that when I finally did get a PlayStation, this was the first game that I rented for it.
Oh, okay.
By that time, I thought it moved kind of slow.
Very slow.
Sure. Yeah, it totally did. I mean, the big draw to Toshinden, other than you know the fact that it was 3D, you could move in and out. You know, of the 3D plane, the special moves were more akin to Street Fighter than, say, you know, Tekken or Virtua Fighter, which are based on like real martial arts or whatever. I liked it a lot because you know you could like 2-in-1 stuff, you know, which felt a lot like Street Fighter to me. So it at the time it was like, wow, this is okay. This is like a 3D Street Fighter. All right, I'm down with this. But the game's not aged well. But at the time.
And that was a game that
seemed like such a cool step forward.
And it showed immediately things that the PlayStation could do that the Saturn couldn't. Like at the time, like the texture mapping and also.
Yeah. And that was the big thing was the texture mapping
and the transparent textures that Saturn could not do. Like if you look at, because Toshinden actually
see through that girl's skirt.
Yeah. Toshinden actually came to the Saturn after a while. And it's, I mean, in terms of the actual like graphic fidelity, yeah, it looks kind of close, but. Everything that should be a transparent texture is like, it looks like a net mesh within that color. It just looks really awkward. It's like right away, right out the gate, PlayStation was like, here are some games that literally, yeah, might work on the Saturn, but it's going to look totally different just because the Saturn can't handle this kind of 3D. And that's what they were pushing.
And small details like that made all the difference back then in those nascent era.
It's so true.
The other fighting game I mentioned was, of course, Tekken, and ultimately that became the PlayStation's answer to Virtua Fighter. Became a hit, spawning multiple sequels. This was the first PlayStation game to sell over a million copies. Were you guys fans of Tekken back then?
I was not.
Yeah.
Not so much.
I didn't really get into Tekken
until
Part 2.
Until later.
I played a lot of Tekken with my friends who had a PlayStation at the time. My buddy had a PlayStation. We played a lot of Tekken. We really got into it in Tekken 2, not the first one. We played the first one a lot in the arcade. For some reason, he didn't get it on PlayStation, which was really weird because of how much we played in the arcade. But we mashed our way a lot in the arcade, let's put it that way. We didn't know what we were doing.
I totally remember it being like, you know, you had to be in one camp or the other. You know, if you were a Virtua Fighter guy, you had a Saturn.
Yep,
you know, if you were in Tekken, PlayStation.
Pretty much. Yeah. I was all about that.
So this next game has a little bit of interesting history. This company that was called Evans and Sutherland, they later changed their name to Single Track. They'd come up with some 3D technology. They showed it off to Sony, and Sony said, make a game out of this. Work with us to make a game out of this. And over at Sony Santa Monica, they had this this guy who'd been a tester, and now he was a designer, and people hated this guy.
Yeah.
This egotistical jackass named David Jaffe, and they said, you are going to be the lead on this, and this is your last chance, man. If you That's can't funny. Make this thing a hit, you're gone. So he said, well, what if we take a game like this, a game idea like this, where we've got these vehicles, and we make it like they got missiles or something.
They got
missiles.
You just blow shit up. Yeah, like, that's cool. Yeah, you got me.
And thus we had Twisted Metal.
Mm-hmm.
This thing was a local multiplayer sensation.
Yeah. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Played the shit out of this two-player.
Again, another game we rented, but we never, no one ever bought it for some weird reason. This is a game that my group of friends, I still did not own a PlayStation at this time, but the people that did, we rented this on a regular basis and played the hell out of it. I don't know why no one bought it.
I bought the hell out of it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, someone bought it. It was one of the first big sales successes over in North America.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering why none of my friends who own a PlayStation actually bought it.
Maybe it was just Canadians.
I'm just talking about, might have just been my block. I don't. I'm just saying, I just found that weird. I'm like, why are we renting this every weekend? Why haven't one of you guys like bought it or something? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah,
because I didn't. Twisted Metal was fun as hell. I didn't have a PlayStation. I was like, fuck that.
We played this quite a bit, my brother and I. I think that we actually got the most into Twisted Metal Black, and that would be like years later.
Oh sure.
But yeah, even early on, like Twisted Metal's appeal as a local multiplayer game was hard to ignore.
And Twisted Metal, I'm sorry, just real quick. Like Twisted Metal, like encompassed like the attitude of Sony's marketing at the time. Well. It was definitely geared towards teens and higher.
Are you ready?
And,
and they,
is that what it was at the time?
They felt Nintendo. Yeah, they felt that Nintendo had a market on the
kids,
the younger generation, parents, and whatnot, and they really Sony really wanted to focus on teens and higher, and what better way, just give them a little bit of fucking attitude and machine guns and fucking killer clowns and shit,
explosions.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Yeah, there was room for everything, and Sony, we would eventually see just about every personality imaginable on this thing. But the last game I want to talk about from 95, the launch here, was called Suikoden.
Yes! This is PS-gasm.
In my opinion, this is the first great RPG for the PlayStation.
I would agree with that, because the only other one that was before it was like Beyond the Beyond, and that game was trash.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
Please tell me.
Yeah, it was trash.
It was trash. But, okay, so I still hold to my guns that the best Suikoden games were the two that were on the original PlayStation. And the reason is because the battle system was so fluid and so fast. You had six characters, and you could literally set up your fight so that all six characters jumped into battle all at once, and it was just really amazing to see and really cool. And that's what I really remember about that game. That, and plus like the 108 playable characters, it was so easy to get guys, like new guys, caught up. It was a fantastic representation of what a JRPG was.
It was, and it did not overstay its welcome either. This is around the time where like people were starting to rate these games in quality by how long they were.
Whereas
Suikoden was one of these games where you really could spend as much time with it as you wanted to, and if you didn't want to find all 108, then you didn't have to.
Yeah, did you guys wanted to only play it in 20 hours, 20, 25 hours, you could do that. If you wanted to put more in, you easily could do that as well.
Were you guys way into RPGs when this came out?
I have always been big time into RPGs, all the way back to the original Dragon Warrior, believe it or not. Okay. So like Japanese RPGs. So yeah, when I was excited when Beyond the Beyond came out, I was like, yes, an RPG. And I bought it, and it was trash. It was trash. So when Suikoden came out and I started playing it, it was amazing. At the time, it was like, man, this is the, I wasn't going to say it's not the best RPG I'd played, because I had just recently played Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger, but it was the best thing besides those that I had played in a long time.
That's why I had like my radar, because my radar didn't get turned on to RPGs till I played Final Fantasy VI, whatever one you want to call it. So that was shortly before the PlayStation came out, and I remember there was Suikoden, and I'm not sure if this is on your list to talk about, but Ark the Lad. Do you guys remember that one?
Not on my list. Yeah.
That was another game I remember following on EGM and like all these magazines being like, oh, this game looks really cool. But I'd never played either of them. But I didn't play another RPG for quite a while.
Check out Suikoden. I think that it holds up.
Really?
Yeah, I think it does too.
It's really good if you're looking for an RPG to play on a portable. It really holds up.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that I know you hate about JRPGs is grinding.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of that.
Lots of grinding. I don't mind grinding. It's just like when I have to grind for like 2 hours. I'm like,
yeah. Just go out and watch, like, and that's the thing. It's like the new versions that like PS2 and beyond, they changed the way that the battles work so much that it really lost its appeal to me. Like, I was excited when I got Suikoden 3 and I played it, and I literally played it for an hour, and I was like, it doesn't even feel like the same thing. Not even a little bit.
So. Yeah, it's always a disappointment. That's another feature of the week right there. But
disappointing sequels. Games.
Yeah, just like sequels. Just when games totally change after they, yeah. Anywho.
All right. 96, Drop the Hammer, Resident fucking Evil. This game defined what we thought of a survival horror in the West.
Yeah. This changed my life.
Inspired by Alone in the Dark, largely based on gameplay ideas from another game that Shinji Mikami had previously designed called Sweet Home.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I still remember hearing so much about this game for such a long time. On the day I finally got a PlayStation, I rented this, laughed my ass off at the voice acting, and then when that dog jumped through the window,
scared the crap out of me.
Everyone,
Jesus Christ!
I just remember I literally jumped up out of my chair. I was like, ah! That was like the first time I'd ever played a game that instilled that type of reaction for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, same here.
And I think that's why it was so interesting. And what drives me crazy about Resident Evil is that I remember playing the first one, and I remember how bad the voice acting was. And
you didn't realize at the time, though. Well, you did.
I realized at the time it was horrible.
Yeah.
But I beat it, and I was like, yes, I cannot wait to play another one of these. And Resident Evil 2 came out. I had no interest. I don't know what happened.
Really?
Well, I had no interest.
I was not the opposite. So I'm a Sega guy at this point. I might have just imported X-Men versus Street Fighter or something like that at the time, because I was the only way you can get it in North America. And my buddy.
Hell of a game.
Sorry? How old was
go
I?
Ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was in high school, and I just remember two of my buddies were talking about this game called Resident Evil. It's so good. Oh my God. You need to play it. I'm like, it's probably not that great. Whatever. So. We had another PlayStation. My parents were actually gone for like the weekend, so I had some people over. We had like I think a 64 was out of this time. Yeah, it totally was out of this time. So we just had like consoles there. We rented a PlayStation, rented Resident Evil, rented something else. I can't remember what the game was on PlayStation. Oh, it might have been Twisted Metal. but we were playing the first night, we were just playing multiplayer stuff. The second day, we started playing Resident Evil, and I was blown away. First of all, by how the graphics of it, just the whole atmosphere, how scary it was. But what I remember this game most was because we were playing it, and then we played it for about 4 hours, and then we're like, well, how do you save? How do you save? I'm like, well, it's not saving. I'm like, oh my God, you need a memory card. I'm like, did we write a memory card? Everyone's looking at each other like, no, why would we need a memory card?
Well, let's just leave it running all night.
Yeah, and then we're like, fuck. So we made one of my buddies get on his bike and ride his bike to Blockbuster and rent a memory card.
I didn't realize you could rent memory cards.
Rent
That's
a memory
hilarious.
Card. Yeah, so we made him go all the way to rent it because we're like, we're not turning this shit off, and like we were getting a memory card. So yeah, but
my anecdote is somewhat similar. at the time, I was heavy into Killer Instinct. And I was playing that a lot on the X band. I don't know if you guys
remember
that.
Oh,
wow,
yeah,
really?
That was like the modem.
So much money, but
did that shit work?
That was like.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It did. Yeah, it totally did. But we decided to take a break, and we rented Resident Evil from whoever at the time. And then seriously, it was that dog moment. It was when that dog jumped through that window that we looked at each other. We're like, we need to go buy this. And later that day, we just returned that rental
and bought
that game and played it all the way through.
That's awesome.
It was so good.
Mm.
But yeah, it actually got me away from Killer Instinct for a while.
That's the first game that made me think I could be in the wrong camp at this point.
Really?
Did Crash Bandicoot do anything to sway you either way?
It didn't. Let's just put it this way. I still had a Saturn when I bought Resident Evil on the Saturn. And that was like, what, a year and a half later?
Yeah, that was a lot. That was quite a bit away.
Yeah.
That was away.
We'll get to the point where I finally was like, yep, fuck this shit. Selling this. But anyway, Crash
Bandicoot was actually all right. You know, it's I was going back and watching some videos of this in preparation for this feature, and it's kind of impressive when you think that this is actually a pretty smooth 3D platformer. At the second year of the PlayStation's life, it's of course made by Naughty Dog. You know,
and all that's, about that's, mascots that time. Yeah, it was Naughty Dog.
Yeah, and you're right, Jeff. That was what exactly what it was, because as soon as Crash Bandicoot came out, everyone was touting as like the Mario of
killer,
of,
the of, Sonic killer. It was like the
Mario of PlayStation in general. It's and like we had it running all the time at the store. You know, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, look at this, Crash Bandicoot is awesome.
It was very sharp. I remember watching it, like seeing it in person. Like, it had very clean lines, and it just looked really good. It didn't have the blurriness of the fog of N64, and it didn't have the garbage, ugly, fucking, what the hell were you thinking, Sega, never putting a good Sonic game out on Saturn-ness to it either. And it looked really good. I was never, like, super, super, I love the commercials. I thought the commercials were hilarious, but I was like, I actually never played a Crash Bandicoot game other than the demo. Other than one of the demo discs.
Yeah, I didn't finish Crash Bandicoot, but I played quite a bit of it, so. It was fun.
Well, to Jason's point about the marketing, this is another good example of Sony's attitude marketing. They advertised this with commercials that had a guy in a Crash Bandicoot costume going to Nintendo and yelling at their building
with the megaphone, right?
So good. So good.
Man, I forgot about that.
Oh, they're so good, those commercials.
Now I want to go look those up on YouTube.
Look up those. Look at the Ratchet and Clank, and look up the fucking Jack and Daxter commercials. So I think those are the best commercials.
I love the one for Crash Team Racing where he pulls up to this old lady.
Oh, that's right. He's like, booyah,
booyah, grandma.
Booyah.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Oh, dude, that one's hilarious. It's great. Go check it out. It's so
good. Dude, oh, man, I played the
booyah,
crap.
Grandma.
I played the only crap the cool out of Crash Team Racing. I think I still have that.
This is
I think
like,
I still
what,
have it in my collection.
Five? No, Crash Team Racing. Probably
Crash we're in 96.
Right?
Was
yeah, like, yeah,
Crash
90,
Team was probably 97, 98.
7-ish, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think closer to 98.
There was no Diddy Kong Racing, damn it.
Diddy Kong Racing was crap.
Booyah, crap.
Speaking of racing, there were a couple of racing games that came out in 96 that I think are notable. One more so than the other for most people. For me, I don't know if you guys ever even played Jet Moto.
I did. Was disappointed.
Sure did.
I was really
try
disappointed.
Playing it now, though.
It would not hold up, but I actually loved this at the time.
See, that's the thing. It's like,
I like that game a lot.
So when did the N64 come out?
96.
Was it before or after Jet Moto? I can't remember.
I think it was before.
I think it was after.
Was it after?
But for me, I played Wave Race first.
Yeah,
because I was playing it on the import, and Wave Race was such a better game.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
but well, I didn't,
I'm pretty
I didn't
sure
have
64 was
yeah. They were fucking hover jets, Chris.
I know.
I don't think
and
you understand.
You know what? You couldn't do any tricks or anything.
No,
it's
like
good.
If you got enough air, man, you could fucking
do one flip and then crash.
And
it doesn't matter because awesome. Sony didn't need Jet Moto because they had another game that I'm sure is the same year. That
yeah. Not to mention that I did watch some video of Jet Moto earlier, and it just made me want to play SSX Tricky again.
Oh, that game. Oh, man, that game was awesome.
But Jeff's talking about Wipeout XL.
I am, yes.
Which was also awesome.
Oh, my God.
That was an awesome game.
And so,
man, it was so smooth.
Yep.
The graphics were just so
good.
And it was such a huge
and
jump from the original
Firestarter,
Wipeout.
Firestarter, Prodigy. Oh,
yes.
That sounds
in
right.
my
yes.
head the entire like entirety of that year.
And you could put in the they had a way that you could mount a minigun on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And there were days when I would play that game and I wouldn't try and win the race. I would just try and destroy all the cars in the race.
Just turn around and start shooting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. Same
or,
here.
I just stayed behind everybody and I just blew guys up as I was going. It was fantastic.
That game blew them.
Wipeout's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that game was such a step up from the first one. The first one did not feel even remotely as good as XL did.
No, I downloaded that because that was one of the first games that was available on the PS1 Classics for PS3.
Yeah.
And right when I, because it was right before Wipeout HD came out.
Or oh, right,
after.
Right.
It was right before, right after. I remember playing Wipeout on the PlayStation. I was like, holy shit, this is not like I remembered it.
Yeah,
like,
the original Wipeout is not good. Yeah. This is not good. But Wipeout XL was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good.
Fantastic.
Next game up on my list is a game that in and of itself is not that great. But it's notable for its place in history, at least for me. There's a game called Toeball Number 1.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
A fighting game that Square published, and it's notable not for the game itself. It's kind of a mediocre 3D fighter. It's notable because it came with a demo disc for Final Fantasy VII.
What's this game now? I'm pretty sure I saw that advertised as a Nintendo 64 game previously, MC.
Toeball Number 1?
No, Final Fantasy VII.
Oh.
So what happened here?
This goes
back
to
a long story.
Yeah, this goes back to that that failure between Sony and Nintendo and redoing
Retreading what the foreshadowing we did earlier.
Yeah, we can't talk about Final Fantasy VII here, but suffice it to say, it was not long after this that I jumped on the PlayStation bandwagon.
Yeah, and you know what?
Because I wanted to try the demo by checking out this game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I like Toeball an awful lot.
I do too. I did.
I love the character
designs.
Akira Toriyama of Dragon Ball fame. It was kind of cool and niche in a time when like anything coming out of Japan was fucking awesome. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a smooth fighter. You know, I liked it a lot.
It was running at 60 frames. You know, it was very, very
impressive. It was one of the first. Yeah, it was really impressive.
It was the first fighter that actually came out and did and ran at 60 frames like that. And what's notable about Toeball Number 1 for me is not necessarily Toeball Number 1. It's Toeball Number 2, which only came out in Japan and
never played it. Heard it was amazing.
Amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, real cool.
And it was like in the at Swap, it was easily the best-selling import we ever had in the store. I mean, we just leave it running. And the whole thing about it is so Toeball Number 1 was still very blocky, right? It wasn't very smooth. Toeball Number 2, all of that was smoothed out and it was still running at 60 frames. And this is basically like developers saying, look what we could do when we code an assembly. And they would and then Toeball Number 2 is just that. I mean, it was amazing. They had, what was it, Jason? Like 100 and something fighters that you could pick from. And like a lot of them were duplicates of each other, but, basically palette swaps. And then they had like this RPG mode where you could go through like a dungeon and you fought guys in the dungeon.
That was perhaps the most unique feature.
Absolutely. Toeball Number 2, I have no idea why this game never came out in America, because to this day, I'm like, man, I wish I still had a copy of that game.
And bear in mind that quest mode was available in the first game too.
Yeah. It was much more robust than the second game, though.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you could equip weapons and shit. Yeah, it was much more fleshed out.
Wonder what would be involved in importing that now and playing it.
A lot, probably. Yeah. You'd probably have to eBay, and I'm wondering how much it would actually go on eBay. That would be scary.
Well, I don't know how much you guys have to say about this next one, but we do want to have one last game to close out 96, and I think it's a big one. So Tomb Raider came out on PS1 and PC at the same time. And I tend to think of it as a PC game.
Oh wow.
But it sold millions and millions on PlayStation. It may not have been quite as big a success as it ended up being if not for the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. No real personal anecdotes. I did play a lot of that game though, and I remember playing it all the way through, and I love the just the exploration that was available to you. Like it was a really good like action adventure game at a time when there wasn't a really strong offering from the PlayStation at that time. That was one of the first big ones, I think.
Yeah, I played the heck out of it. I mean, I remember getting it for Christmas, and it was unusual because I knew I was getting it because my mom came into the store and bought it. And she's like, okay, and I'm going to wrap it up. You can play it on Christmas. And that was pretty much it. I played it all day Christmas Day. It was pretty
amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
It was good.
Now, if we went back to that one now, It wouldn't be good, but
yeah,
because to make jumps really well, you had to walk up to the edge, take a step back, and then do a running jump to make sure that you actually made your jumps. And it was, man, I don't know.
But we would not have had Uncharted without this
game.
Absolutely
not. No way.
And in fact, one wonders whether or not the existence of Uncharted had anything to do with the fact that because of Tomb Raider's success on the original PlayStation, games like this were kind of associated with the brand by the time they got to the PS3, maybe in Europe primarily, but still.
Yeah.
Then we get to 1997. Mm-hmm. 1997 is maybe the biggest year for the PlayStation. For me, it is.
For me, it was. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a shame that we don't have anything to say about Vandal Hearts.
I have something to say about Vandal Hearts.
I never played that.
Oh, Chris. It was great. It was a great, great game. It was nice. And the one thing that I remember about Vandal Hearts is that it was another one of those games where, you know, if you wanted to get more out of it, you could. Because it was a strategy RPG. It was the first of first tactical RPG that I ever played.
First tactical RPG,
yeah, and
the first one for the PlayStation for sure.
Yeah, and so one of the things that you could do is like you could actually get your main character to be this like Deus Machina type character. Like you could actually
this
create
what type what
Deus Machina basically is like a god mode. But you could get it, like you could become a Vandalier. You could actually search different places on the maps and find different pieces of armor. And if you got them all, he got this armor on. He didn't even carry a shield. Just walked around with a sword in his hand. And if anybody tried to attack him in the front, he would just put his hand up and a shield would show up and just block any shot from the front. And that's one of the things that I remember about this game because it was like this real interesting side quest that you had to go on to get all of this stuff. And man, I would say, you know, if you are a strategy RPG fan, Vandal Hearts it's only about 15 hours long. You could get through it pretty quick if you don't do everything. It's worth going and taking a look at where it all started.
Yeah, good game. I enjoyed that. For me though, the game when I, this was around the time I got my PlayStation. I got it because, you know, I'd wanted one for a while. I wanted that demo disc. And
so what
we can talk about this.
What were you
right
playing
now,
at the time before you jump into it? So your main console at the time was?
Main console at the time was still the Super NES.
Still the Super Nintendo. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I jumped on board the PlayStation train. I'd wanted one for a few months now. They had that Tobal demo disc. I wanted that. And now here comes the DualShock.
Mm. Oh yeah, the dual analog and the rumble.
Yeah, not only that, but they dropped the price. So I jumped on board and got the system that had the DualShock included. Had rumble, had two analog sticks. The first controller I think that had two analog sticks.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was.
When did they introduce the first one with the analog stick? Because there was one that just had one analog stick.
Not for PlayStation.
Sony's never had one? Okay.
No, PlayStation's so first, yeah. They had a dual analog controller that came out only in Japan. And what it was, it looked exactly the same, right? Except for the handles were a little longer and the sticks were concave instead of convex. And then there was no rumble. So that was the original dual analog controller that came out in Japan. The DualShock is the first one that we saw here. So they made their modifications to it, prepped it up a little bit, and they released it in America.
And isn't this nuts that they would come out with a controller that adds something like analog sticks halfway through the life of the system?
It's nuts. Entirely new controller.
It was entirely new. And it wasn't used as much as I would have well,
it was barely used.
It was
not
barely
the second
used,
analog.
Yeah.
The analog
Ape Escape was the big game that used it.
Right.
Ape Escape.
Well, that was the first game that required
Yes, there you go.
Right. Which one?
Ape Escape?
Ape Escape.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I never
And it actually used everything on the controller. And, you know, it's like you think back. It's like there were so many first-person shooters that came out. And it's like, how do we play those with a digital controller? Oh. It's like I can't even envision it anymore.
It happened up until almost
Who
Halo.
Who needs to look up? What are you talking about?
Even.
And that's exactly right. I mean, you just didn't look up. That's
no, there wasn't anything you looked up.
Yeah,
you
there was no reason
magazines
to.
Magazines and like, that's all it was. Was like, eh. I played Quake
World,
3
man.
On fucking Dreamcast for how long? I thought that was perfectly fine. So much so, I hated the Halo controls when I first played an Xbox. I'm like, this game's stupid. You can't control it. Why are you controlling it? This is dumb. I like using the face buttons to move around.
Why is there not a strafe button? Give me a strafe button.
Also in the DualShock, you had to press a button to enable the analog sticks. You'd have to remember to turn them on before trying to use them in a game.
You know what's funny is you kind of have to do that now as well. Like if you're emulating, if you're using like a PS3 and you're emulating a PS1 that required the use of that, you actually have to go into the settings to turn that on.
Oh, wow.
It brings me back every time you have to do that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Nostalgia.
No, the big RPG for me this year, at least the first one.
Yeah, there were a couple.
The first big RPG for me was Wild Arms.
Yes, I played the heck out of that.
I didn't realize
too.
I was so late.
That is one of the best opening songs too. Like,
holy
shit,
dude!
That.
When I popped this in, a real video came up. It was an anime intro, CD quality audio, dude whistling and orchestra. Yeah. I mean, you guys had Sega CDs. You'd seen stuff like this with Lunar and Lunar 2.
Yes. Sure.
But for me, this is the first time I've seen
Mark and the
like
Funky Bunch music fucking video thing. That's
Jeff, go away
you
right
fucking
now.
Be talking to mess about Monkey Mark. Listen. Settle down.
The actual game was pretty good, too. I mean, it was a kind of a traditional RPG in how it played, and at the time, I was like, yes, bring me that. And then there was an unconventional twist toward the end of the game that surprised me. So on the whole, I really enjoyed that game.
Cool Western
another
motif
game that
too.
Came out.
I liked it.
Yeah, I dig it. Another game that came out in 97, and not an RPG per se, more like a, well, Sony called it a Zelda killer.
Bad
and I don't know about
this.
Yeah, I'm tweaked right now. What was this game?
But this game was called Alundra.
Oh, okay. There we go. Yeah.
It was published over here by Working Designs, and at the time, I didn't have much of an association with that publisher.
I did.
But
didn't
but
have
you
a Saturn.
Did, so.
I did. I was on the way to getting every Working Designs game that ever was made.
And
so
if you wanted Working Designs, you had to have a Saturn at that time.
I had like a Saturn at that like, time. Actually. By this time, I had a Saturn. I did get the PlayStation first, but by this time, I did have a Saturn. And the one that you mentioned earlier on Saturn, that the first RPG, gosh, what was it called? I don't remember.
Lunar?
Magic Knight Ray Earth. Magic Knight Ray Earth?
That one was later. Magic Knight Ray Earth was actually very late in the Saturn life cycle. I'm trying to remember what the first one was.
It was
pretty bad, and I got
something
it just
Odyssey.
It was
yeah. Wasn't it
something Albert Odyssey?
Odyssey?
That was
Albert
still kind of late.
Albert Odyssey.
There was another one that was before it, and I can't remember what it's called right now, but.
Was it part of the Oasis, series?
Beyond Oasis?
And then the follow-up was on Saturn. I forgot what it was.
Those were maybe Sega.
Dragon Force.
See, now I'm gonna have to, Dragon Force was amazing.
Dragon Forces.
But that's not the one I'm talking about. The first Working Designs game that I ever got for Saturn. Oh man, now I have
they,
to
they were
this
good
up.
Cause their packaging was just,
yeah, their packaging
over
is
this
where,
month,
like, was what was
like,
there.
Oh, like the foil type covers and stuff. And
Shining
like,
Wisdom. Mm-hmm.
Shining Wisdom.
Yeah. That game was kind of trash.
Yeah, it was good.
But
Working Designs published that?
Yeah, Working Designs published Shining Wisdom. That was the first game on Saturn was Shining Wisdom. And then they did Dragon Force and Iron Storm and then Albert Odyssey and Magic Knight Ray Earth. And then last was like Sega Ages. They did that
they
under
did Lunar
the SPAS.
They?
Yeah, they did Lunar as well. Yeah. They did Lunar for Sega CD and they did it for PlayStation. But Alundra was Alundra is where I decided I think I need every game this company.
Did you play Landstalker? Because we talked a little bit off the air, like the
I didn't play Landstalker. Because
I played Landstalker on the Genesis, and that was like because that was like I was again Sega, so that was my Zelda.
Yeah, at this time I had not played,
and Landstalker. It was nothing like Zelda.
Right, it was nothing like Zelda. No. But yeah, this game basically made me go, okay, now I want everything in this game that this company's made. Or has published, so.
I'm still, okay, I gotcha.
I loved Alundra so much. Man, it hurt me so badly when I bought Alundra 2 and realized how terrible that game
yes,
was.
Was it bad?
It was nothing like.
It was nothing like it.
It was
speaking of a game that was nothing like what I expected, Bushido Blade.
Well, this game was
also came out in 97.
This game,
there weren't any fireballs.
But this game was
there was a gun.
They were trying to break new ground with this. It's like, you know what? If you get hit with a sword, you're gonna die. And that's
not to mention you would just run around this stage.
That's all
it's
did.
Not like this is a thing you ring out or something.
It was like a Smash like Brothers type. Kind of arena. In
that
a
game's
bit.
So cheap. Fuck that. I did not appreciate the genius of Bushido Blade at the time.
Oh, God, no. Neither did
I. I've come to appreciate it.
It took a while to really make its case, especially considering the environment into which it came. There were no life bars.
Nope.
You could kill your opponent with one hit if you let his guard down.
Yep.
So you had to realize that this was not a traditional fighting game. It was a dueling game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Like Nidhogg, but way before that shit.
It's a Nidhogg ripoff.
I just remember in Bushido Blade.
Yeah, it's a totally ripped off Nidhogg.
I just remember in Bushido Blade that I never really learned a whole lot about the game, but as I was always really good at playing the game because there was one move that you could do. It was like, I think it was back forward attack, and he would just dash forward and sword in the head, just slash in the head. And it was basically a one shot kill every time. And it happened so fast that if you did it right, the other player didn't have time to do anything about it. So unless they were running backwards as soon as the game started, if they move forward at all, you just do that and you just pop them in the head and they die. It was kind of cheap.
I just don't understand Bushido Blade.
It was cheap.
We're bringing it back.
I was watching Evo 2007.
Industry,
Chris.
Bringing it back. Nice.
Keep going with 97 because I'm almost there. Where my all shit? Right. I lost my
Parappa
shit.
The Rapper was a game that That's I saw the one. On Blockbuster store shelves. That I was like, what the hell? What?
That was.
I have to check this
that
out.
That was one of those games, man, that people would come in and that. And
his first rhythm
if you had it running, if we had it running on the TV, they would just stop and look at it. It's like,
looks like a cartoon.
What is this? And then they would walk out with
the
game.
You gotta do what?
And then they would walk out with the game.
Yeah.
Because it was so unique and it was so
odd,
different from everything. I just kind of reiterated myself. Sorry. But that's, you know, it was just a completely different way of playing a game and a different, you know, genre.
In so many ways. Like Jeff said, yeah, maybe the first rhythm game ever? Quite possibly.
I would probably say so.
It might be.
And it made a good case for itself with that first stage, that Chop Chop Master Running stage.
Chop Chop, it's all in the mind.
Yeah, the only thing you had to do was hit that one button at the right time. And then after that, if you wanted to freestyle, the game wasn't going to penalize you for it. I rented this one, and this was the game that made the PlayStation start to feel like a console with a unique flavor to me. Here were these crazy-ass games with so much personality, games unlike anything I'd seen before. It felt like a console that was being defined by games that could afford to take a risk. And actually, that's something else I should mention. $40 per game was significantly less than what I'd been used to paying.
Sure. Yeah.
I felt like I could take a risk on a lot of these, too.
Yeah.
Two more games we've got to talk about in 97. I've got one of them above the other one here. Let's go ahead and talk about Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm.
This game was so huge, and I could not have predicted that. It was everywhere. Within 3 weeks of its North American release, 500,000 copies sold.
And we probably all read a lot of magazines at the time. There's probably about a good 10 gaming magazines. There's EGM 1, EGM 2.
With on the cover.
Yeah, all cover stories.
All the cover stories.
You could not go anywhere without seeing.
You could not get away from it. It was
It was impossible.
It had incredibly cinematic commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard people talk about this game that had never talked to you about video games at all,
and they're talking about a JRPG.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the biggest thing about this is, and with the demo especially, like I would just when we played the demo in the store. We would just continuously do Leviathan over and over and over. It's like, check this out. It's awesome. And it was like the best, like those summons were some of the best graphic fidelity that you'd seen on a system, on a console.
At that time. Yeah. It was an epic spectacle.
Yeah. And I just remember, seeing
a
5-minute
long spell. It's amazing. How it's like, Jesus Christ. It takes 10 seconds to this whole spell. I don't like it anymore. It's like, at that time though, it was like, the Knights of the Round, that thing lasts like half an hour.
I'd just go to lunch.
Yeah, that's right. But I remember my favorite one was Bahamut Zero, which is the one that was in space and fired the shot from space.
The shot down.
And like he cocked his wings into premier position. And that was my favorite. That was the one I always used when I wasn't, you know, fighting a boss that was going to take multiple hits. But It was amazing for the time. And, you know, I look back at it now and it's
beyond
like.
Beyond amazing. That thing sold so many North Americans on JRPGs.
Yeah,
was ridiculous.
I mean, Final Fantasy was already a household name, you know, and it was such an established property on Nintendo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to find out that it was coming to Sony,
it was
like.
That was mind-blowing
for people.
In a
CD format, you know, it's going to be, you know, X amount of hours long, mm-hmm. CD quality audio. So many people jump ship.
I maxed out my clock.
Just all like 3D based and like yeah. polygonal based.
Absolutely just, amazing. I imported the fucking game before it came out here.
Oh, shit.
And I played it all the way through. Did in you use Japanese. A fax? No, this is prior to
how did
like,
you do
know,
that?
The internet being huge. It's like, you know, you start like recognizing the names, you know, of spells.
Oh, okay.
After,
so, yeah.
after a while, it's yeah. like, okay, this casts that. That's obviously a fire spell.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of trial and error, and yeah, I actually got through that fucking game.
Wow.
That's totally
and,
it.
And you wow. could get fax at the time, but like, I just remember while we were, while at the store, if people came in and asked us a question, like, first thing we would, instead of saying, oh yeah, just go to GameFAQ, it was like, do you have a computer? It's like, yeah. Right. I mean, and that's how this
Here's
world has
AOL
changed.
Disk.
It's like,
yeah.
do you have a computer? Oh yeah, just check out GameFAQ.com.
Yeah, that's so true.
Do you have the internet?
Do you have the internet?
Have
that's
the
right.
internet.
Do you have the
exactly.
internet?
Exactly. I've got my dream kit. Oh, Dreamcast is no yet. Never mind. Sorry, go ahead.
I got a couple of anecdotes about this one. So first one, this is one of my favorite stories. I used to go to the electronics boutique in Montgomery Mall like every week in Montgomery, Alabama, where I grew up. And I was browsing the PlayStation games, and this group of guys walks in. And one of them picks up Final Fantasy VII on the shelf. Now, of course, I played the previous Final Fantasy games. I loved those. Mm-hmm. But they were not the sorts of games I would have expected anyone but nerds to enjoy. And these guys were not nerds. That's,
even though they're way ahead of time, they're like, yo, heard this is like Halo. Or it's like Call of Duty.
Like, now, actually, what they said was, because I remember this conversation, one was like, Final Fantasy VII? Man, I heard this game was tight.
So Travis was in your store.
Yes. See, for another one of the guys. Where we were, it was fat. Man, that game is fat.
That game's fat.
And, oh, man. I have a story about that. We can get that later if you want.
Yeah, let's get him.
Another one of the guys looks at the box and he says, shit, for $39.95, it better be tight. No. Yeah, man, you don't know, man.
Sure enough.
The other one was just that I remember thinking back on Final Fantasy VII that the way it starts in Midgar, mm-hmm. The previous games had traded so heavily in this epic adventure that you would go on, and here this game put you in a city and kept you there for hours, and you would just see different parts of it, and it was such a different level of scale that I felt like it was a completely different and totally welcome game, to the extent that when you finally get out of the city and it becomes that classic epic adventure again, I was kind of disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. Ultimately, still liked the game. But the way it began was just so different. And I'd spent so much time in previous years playing games that were more traditional, more like old Final Fantasy games, mm-hmm. that I found myself craving more of that different stuff.
Yeah, that's where my disconnect is, I guess, because like I literally six was the first RPG I actually like was like this. Someone showed me, I didn't like RPGs at all, and a guy in high school was like grade 10, I think. He's like, "Yo, you play Final Fantasy 3?" I'm like, "No, I don't have a Super Nintendo for one." Secondly, I don't play those games. Like, no, you have to play this. There's this opera scene. It's amazing. You got to check it out. So that was like the first scene I saw, and that's like one of the epic scenes of that game. Everyone like loves that. And so when I got to 7, still haven't on the PlayStation yet, that just totally blew my mind. I was like, this is absolutely one of the best things I've ever experienced. Never beat the game in my life. But I only went from 6 to 7. I never played mm-hmm. any other RPGs before that. I dabbled in like Phantasy Star a little bit. I played Final Fantasy Star 4 because I came out after Final Fantasy 3. And I wanted something on my mm-hmm. Genesis to play, so I had to pick up Phantasy Star 4. But yeah, so I didn't see that, because you're already, like, in this genre for a while. You got a background in it. You know what to look for, what's different, what's going to change. I'm like, I was like, hey! I was probably one of those people that would, if I really got into RPGs, I'd be one of those people right now being like, yo, Final Fantasy VII is the best RPG ever made. I'd probably be that guy. Which I know.
Yeah.
You know, probably would be.
You know, another game came out a month after Final Fantasy VII, and I was in the middle of playing Final Fantasy VII. So even though I'd heard that this other game was good, I said, I'm in the middle of Final Fantasy. I can't play this right now. I'm going to get it and then loan it to my buddy.
So you
because
bought
I heard that I heard from EGM that this other game is really good. Okay. And then this guy comes back to me and he says, dude, you picked the wrong game.
What?
You picked the wrong game. This Castlevania shit is incredible.
Yes!
You got all these swords, and it's an RPG, and you can go anywhere in the castle. So like wait, Metroid and the soundtrack.
You lent this to your friend?
Yeah.
You bought
before
it.
Before I'd had a chance to play it.
Wow. Good on you.
Because you were playing Final Fantasy VII. And see, I wonder how things would turn out, how differently things would have turned out if I wasn't working at SWAP by the, at this time. Because... Mm-hmm. Castlevania, I was not like, I played all the Castlevania games for the NES and I played Super Castlevania 4. And I played like Castlevania Adventure on the Game Boy. So I liked Castlevania games, but you know, Symphony of the Night was not really on my radar until somebody I worked with bought the Japanese one. And as soon as I saw him playing it, I was like, I need this game. So I bought the Japanese one and I played it. Played the Japanese one, which came out before Final Fantasy. So I was able to get through the majority of Symphony of the Night before Final Fantasy came out. If I was not working at the store, I would probably have gotten Final Fantasy before getting Symphony of the Night. And since I put so much time into Final Fantasy, I wonder if I would have put as much time into Symphony of the Night.
Yeah. We would have never been friends.
I know.
Our lives would have been completely different.
Oh, really? You guys bonded over Castlevania?
No. Okay. If anything, it was Phantasy Star Online.
Before going
God
too much
damn,
forward.
Goddamn, Castlevania Symphony of the Night was so friggin' good.
Oh, man.
When he finally gave it back to me and I fired it up, and you get to that intro where you think, what the hell?
Dracula already?
Was there a save file on there or something? Yeah, it's like, am I at the end of the game? This Richter guy, I think he was in the third game, right? Mm-hmm. Or no, it's Bloodlines.
Yeah, no, Rondo of Blood.
The Genesis one?
It was Rondo of Blood. It never came out here until well after. Until
the PSP version. Well, there's a shitty version.
There's a shitty Super Nintendo version,
And then it starts over after you beat the boss, and now you're playing as Alucard, and there's no whips. You're using swords.
Where's my whip at? Yeah.
And the music was so friggin' good.
Yeah.
And it played like Castlevania, but you could go anywhere you wanted. It was, wow, it was fantastic. And then.
No one said to you, dude, it's like a Metroidvania.
It was a little
game.
Like Metroid.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny with all the stuff that's happening with Bloodstained. Like, he came out and said, it was never my intention to make a game like Metroid. It was my intention to make a game like Zelda that played in
a
2D side scrolling.
Yeah.
And
well, that's what Metroid technically is too. It's kind of like
absolutely. So it was interesting to hear that perspective of it though.
It's like Metroid and Castlevania had a baby. We should call it something.
That's right.
Yeah, like Castle Troid or something like
Castle
that.
Castle Troid.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah. That's a good idea.
How about Egovania?
Egovania.
Yeah.
Did it, when I
guys,
found
I
out about
fucking,
that
oh
yeah,
sorry.
What's up?
I hate Skype. I really do. No, Skype I just wanted to say that Castlevania Symphony of the Night, one of the best fucking games
of all
ever
time.
Made.
Ever.
Yeah,
of
and
all
I play through it once every couple years.
I played through quarters of it a bunch of times. And
actually, Jason, you missed Distractions. I started it again.
Oh, shit. Nice.
Yeah, like the ninth time.
Yeah, this will be my ninth time playing it. So I think eighth or ninth. I can't remember which one.
Ninth Symphony.
I'm thinking I'm way behind the curve now because I'm thinking like that game came out after I got a PlayStation, but maybe not. Because there's a couple games we have not touched on yet that one specifically that maybe be like, all right, fuck this Sega thing. I'm throwing it out the window.
All right, well let's roll on. 97 was a huge year for the system. I think we can all agree on that. But 98 was no slouch. Let's start talking about Gran Turismo here.
Oh my God. I put so many hours into Gran Turismo.
I put so many who gives a shits into Gran Turismo until a certain point. As you are.
Until
MC.
A certain point?
Until a certain really? Part. MC as you are, yes.
Okay. Well, for one thing, this was a racer with support for analog sticks.
Yep.
And the rumble,
which was significant. Every car had a different rumble, which was awesome.
But this one was based on a new idea. It was that you could race to earn money, then use the money to buy new cars, use the money to buy new parts for your cars, customize your cars, and then drive your customized car. Mm-hmm. And the cars you would be buying were actual cars.
Yep. This is the first
real
this is the first like real racing simulation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can drive a Nissan Skyline?
That's right.
Totally. And everybody did in that game.
Except for me. I actually was driving around the 3000 GT. The Mitsubishi GTO.
That's what I had the first time, and I had that in the Skyline. I'm getting ahead of myself, but those are the two. If you had those two cars, soup them up, put the turbocharger in them, you could win every single race.
Pretty much, yeah.
Anywho, yep. Anyway.
Loved Gran Turismo. And I don't usually like racers that even hew that close to realism.
I did pretty much everything you could do in the original Gran Turismo.
Without jumping ahead, I hated that game. Like, that was one of the first games I had from PlayStation. I played a certain other game, a shitload, and I played this once and hated it until I went to a party and a bunch of friends were like, dude, you need to play that game. It's really good. Just give it a try. Like, just get used to the controls. I thought it controlled like shit because I'm used to like Ridge Racer and Daytona USA and Virtual Racer and like Rock and Roll Racing, like all these like arcade racers.
Sure.
And like Cruising USA. And then I was like, it's garbage. And like, just give it a try. And then once I actually gave it a try, I was so addicted to that game. That it's the first game that ever made me interested in cars. Like, I didn't care for cars at all.
Really?
Nothing. I did not.
That's hard to imagine.
Yeah, I did not give a shit about cars whatsoever until really getting to Gran Turismo. And that's when I kind of paid attention to stuff. I'm like, wow. Like, when I was like that age, I wanted to own a Mitsubishi, Eclipse. Like, I remember Chris had one. I was like, it's cool. Chris has an Eclipse. That was around the time when they first started coming to North America. And I'm like, these are really cool cars. And like the GTO and stuff like that. And it made me pay attention. But I hated that game. The first time I played it, I was like, this is garbage. Because I wasn't like reading reviews and stuff all the time at this time.
I can't shoot any rockets in this.
Yeah, exactly. I can't blow up
any cars.
Where's the clown atop my roof?
Where's my boost pads?
Yeah. But then my friends convinced me and said, and I was reading reviews. Like, every review was like, 10, 9.7, like whatever. I'm like, what are they? These guys are fucking crazy. This isn't fun.
Yeah.
And then I got into it. I'm like, this is actually too much. Like, I had to work the next day, like McDonald's, something like that, like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I was like grinding because the first Gran Turismo, you had to actually do the qualifying races too, not just the main races. Yep.
So yeah, the license tests and everything.
You had to do all the license tests, all that stuff. And I was grinding just to get the Dodge Viper because I wanted enough money to get the Dodge Viper. And one night I stayed up, like, it was probably till like 5 o'clock in the morning, just getting enough money to get the Dodge Viper, got the Dodge Viper, did a couple races, woke up an hour and a half later and went to work.
Like, yeah. Oh, the things you can do when you're young.
It was a total 180. Like, I hated that game. Like, what? I didn't pay for it, which we'll get to later, but I was still like,
oh no.
Yeah, well, though, I can admit it. It's like, yeah. Anyway, go ahead. There's, but that was a good game. It got me interested in cars and racing games, to be honest with you. Like, sim racing games.
Yep.
No, I'm just trying to imagine what the circumstances could be where you didn't pay for the game.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted a contest. Congratulations.
Yeah, there you go. Good free, job. Here you go.
All right.
Sweet. So I got a free copy of Gran Turismo.
Did you guys play Ion Honda?
I did.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Hell, yeah.
I did.
That was, like, that was when Square was doing, like, their kind of
crazy
stuff. Yeah, they were trying to branch out into other things, and
there's Air Geets was around the same time.
Whenever I see Einhander, makes me remember Air Guys, and I think it's a fighting game, and it's not.
It's not. It's right? A weird. Oh,
Einhander is a shmup. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Einhander is a stupid shmup. Yeah.
Stupid shmup.
Oh man, no. I like
Air Geets is the shitty fighting game.
That's right.
Hey. No. That girl God has a yo-yo, okay? Yeah. God bless the ring.
Yeah. No, I like Ion Hunter. I like the mechanic here, which was that your weapons have limited ammo, and therefore, in order to get new weapons, you have to steal them from enemies. So there's this constant back and forth of grabbing a gun and then using it up as fast as you can so that you can grab another gun from somebody. Yeah.
And then you can have, if I remember right, you could have two guns, right? You could have one on the top and one on the bottom of the ship. And
there was an unlockable one that let you get three, but you didn't have like a pea shooter.
You're right. There was no pea shooter. But it was, you know, I remember how cool it was that you could actually grab two different types of guns for the top and the bottom of the ship. And, like you could have one that was like an explosion, like area of effects type weapon. And then one that was more of like the cannon that did, that fired bullets straight. There was a lot of variety there that you could play with that game.
I'm going to call an audible here and mention a game that's not on the list, but for me in 98 was important, and that's Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God.
That, yeah. Oh, man. You know, I actually played that game so much that I unlocked Cloud, leveled him up, and beat the game with him. That's how that's how much time I put into that game.
Yep.
I maxed out the clock on that as well.
My significant other at the time bought that for me for Valentine's Day, which was a huge mistake because I told her that I'm sorry, but this entire weekend I'm going to be down in the basement playing this game and I'm not going to see you. This is a bad purchase. It's a sweet one, but I'm sorry. I'll see you in a week.
I'll see you on Monday.
Yeah. That's almost literally what I did. Like week long. Oh my God. It's you still know, one of my favorite games of all
time. It is. It's not like the story in that game is not good. It is. The presentation is top notch as you would expect. But that was one of the first examples I had of a game with a Final Fantasy name on it continually drawing me back because it was just so fun.
Yeah,
I loved the battles. I would just go out and grind battles because battles were fun.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to use the job system to come up with a team of your own. I had so much
diversity and like replayability to that game.
Yes. There were so many different classes you could mix and match. So,
That was one of the first experiences I had that of things that we have more of nowadays, where you would talk about a game with somebody and you'd have completely different stories.
Sure.
About how you got through a particular part of the game. And just not only that, which
classes that they leveled up and which powers that they chose to focus on.
Yeah, and it was your way of helping your friends understand why you would use the calculator or where geomancers could come in handy is by saying, here's what I did with my three guys, and they did this, and then this other guy came in.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's toward the end of the game, I just sent Orlando in there and pretty much killed him. Is Jeff back yet?
Yeah, probably not. We should just talk about the next game.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Next game on my list is Metal Gear Solid.
I've heard of that. That game's all right.
That game's okay. Oh, man.
Next. Yeah.
When we got the Japanese demo for this game, that is all that ran on the big TV for weeks on end. And the demo was just like that when you first enter Shadow Moses and you have to get clear that first area and then when you crawl into the grate to get to the next one, and then the demo ended. And it was all in Japanese, and I just like the one thing I remember is Kagito Snake, and that's like Snake. Liquid Snake in Japanese, and I probably thrashed that, and I'll probably get hate mail for it, but that's the one thing I remember in the back of my head of playing the Japanese demo of that game, and man, when that game came out, I could not buy it quick enough.
This game was significant to me, towards the end of the game. Like, I had already just been like, I dove head first into this and just like, I didn't want to look back. But there was a point that, to me where it's like, holy shit, this would make a really good fucking movie. And I'm just, that was the first time that the games had like really blended into, for me anyway, that I thought that they were such a fucking, big medium, that they had that kind of like mass appeal that it could really like, actually be like a big summer blockbuster. And it, to me, it held up, whereas, previously video games were always kind of a second, I don't know, they weren't nearly as good as like movies or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this upped the production value, both in terms of storyline and just like scope and just like, the just crazy fucking characters in this.
It upped it in production value for sure. And also just, this is the point you were circling around, but games had previously tried to do this thing where they were going to say, you're going to be like, you're playing a movie.
Yeah.
And they never got it. Like I never felt like I was the star of an action movie. Right. Like even games that came around this time or after this, that promised us the cinematic experience like Parasite Eve, for all the successes of that game, could not capture the feeling that I got when I played Metal Gear Solid, where I really felt like something amazing was happening here. I was the star. Good God, that scene where you're fighting a friggin' helicopter on the roof.
Sure.
And you have to shoot Stinger missiles at the thing to take it out, And the whole time you could call these guys and they're just like, dude, why are you calling me? There's a friggin' helicopter.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. That game changed my life.
Incredible.
Literally, that was the game I saw, read EGM, saw some video. Was the internet around? Yeah, I definitely saw it in motion. And I was like, that game is the future of gaming. Like, that's what games are going towards. And I needed the console at this point. I needed it. I just needed it. And
this was the system seller for you?
This was the one that made me realize that I refused to let go that the Saturn was dying. And I was like, no, there's still good stuff. And the third party support was kind of dropping. EA was really kind of sputtering shit out.
If you didn't go imports for Saturn, you were missing on pretty much everything that was really good.
Yeah, pretty much. That was the first game I imported, was X-Men vs. Street Fighter, and the only one at the time.
Yeah.
And it was that in third-party games that you can get, or first-party games in, North America. That was pretty much it. EA was jumping ship, and at that point, it was hey, that's a pretty big deal, because EA was, really tight with Sega. They started on Sega. They started with Madden, and they helped make Joe Montana Football on Sega. They were really tight with Sega for a long time. And that kind of made me realize, I need to sell this shit. And I sold it, finally, with a bunch of games that I probably should not have given away. So I basically sold the system.
No?
Yeah. I sold the system with the games that the guy wanted, and he didn't want to buy Panzer Dragoon Saga, Shining Force 3, and X-Men vs. Street Fighter.
Panzer Dragoon? You had Panzer
Dragoon
Saga? I had
Panzer Dragoon Saga.
What the hell, Jeff?
I got it day one. I reserved it at EB Game.
Jeff just lost points on the MC Wilson scale.
Dude, I got Electronics Boutique. I was the only one who fucking reserved it. And I had no idea. There's only 5,000 copies released in North America. I had no clue. And
I still have one.
Yeah, you fucking... I gave it away.
I'll never be able to play that game. It's so sad just thinking that game, you'll never play it again.
Never. They lost the code.
If you didn't play it then, it's lost in time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's actually lost in time.
And they've never made a decent... the one for Xbox was okay, but it wasn't Panzer Dragoon Saga. Mm-hmm. That thing was...
Panzer Dragoon Saga is on my top five RPGs.
Four discs of amazingness.
Yep. I wonder what that game would be like today.
I don't think it would hold up just because Saturn had really bad 3D.
Oh, no. But what I mean is, what if they
rebuilt
it from the ground up and remade it today?
I don't know. Well, today's Sega definitely wouldn't do that.
No, they certainly wouldn't. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, that had the most unique combat system in RPG, especially at the time.
It was very cool.
It was a completely different way of looking at things. Mm. So, but this isn't a Saturn show. Sorry.
No, but I sold it, and the reason I sold it is because my buddy's brother, who was an older brother, and he was like, "I can get you a PlayStation for I think it was $150, modded, with two games."
Ooh, wow, yeah. Nice. That's not bad.
So I was like, "All right, well, yeah, I'm gonna do that. You know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna sell my Saturn. It's time. I want that Metal Gear. Metal Gear wasn't out at the time, so just before Metal Gear came out." And I went to his house to pick it up, and then I was like, oh, cool. All he told me was, I can sell you PlayStation for $150 new, modded with two games. So with the two games, I figured there'd be new games. I didn't realize they're going to be burnt, because I was... To take a quote out of Jason Aistricker, I was young, impressionable, and poor. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to take that. And I picked it up with Gran Turismo and Tekken 3, which...
Tekken 3, yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Tekken 3 was fantastic.
I love Tekken 3. Yeah. You know, I initially was drawn in by the idea of this Tekken Force mode that was included in the PS1 version.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
The
game itself won me over.
That was the one I played. I went and picked it up from his house, and I was looking at it. I was like, these cases look weird. He's like, oh, they're burnt. They're not actual the game. I was like, oh. Okay. And at the time, I was still kind of cool. I can play games for really cheap, buy them up people who can burn them, because I know how to do it. I never did it. The only game I actually burnt not on my own, but got somebody who knew somebody was Metal Gear. And because I wanted the game so bad, I was talking to my buddy. He came over. We're like shooting a movie with our kid. Like my dad had a new camcorder. We're shooting this really stupid, dumb movie. And I was talking about this game called Metal Gear. And he's like, oh, he's like, my buddy Dan, he has it already. I'm like, what the f-? No, he doesn't. Get the fuck out of here. It was like 2 months away from like release. He's like, no, he has it. Like, I'm like, the Japanese version. He's like, no, no. He's like, the American version. I'm like, whatever. He's like, no, if you have $10, I can get it for you right now. I'm like, okay. So he went over to his house. 5 minutes later, he walks out. He's like, here you go. 2 discs and like a CD thing. And that's when I did my nerdiest thing ever, when I actually recreated, like, put my own like box art on it and like screenshots on the back and everything. I totally I wish I took pictures so bad. It was like so
my lovingly pirated version.
Yeah. Exactly. I put so much. I remember my EGM magazine. I took a bunch of pictures of like the screens and stuff and pasted on the back and the front, the Metal Gear logo and everything. I'm like, this is awesome.
I know that I've seen bootleg copies out there where they actually wrote the codec number on the disc.
On the disc, like, so you can get it. So yeah. Yep. He wrote it on a piece of paper. He's like, oh, man, you got 2 points. Just put in this number. I'm like, okay. I did end up buying the game eventually. But yeah, that was like the game that made me switch over. That was like, yeah, I need to play this. And
guys, let's do 3 more. What do you say?
All right.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Years or games?
3 more games.
Oh. 1 year.
It's getting pretty late on the East Coast. I know.
After Metal Gear Solid, who cares?
There were some good games still on this thing. Medal of Honor was a pretty important game, I thought. Back in 1999. Steven Spielberg had this idea that maybe it would be a good idea to put a first-person shooter on a console and base it during World War II.
That would never sell.
That would never sell. Well, it sold. It sold.
I bought a copy. Yeah. I might still have it. I'm not sure.
Not a bad game. You know what? Let's do 4. Let me throw Silent Hill in here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was like that, like not redefined, but man, that was like the next step in like the survival horror stuff in terms of cinematic, spooky games.
There was a clear distinction between this and Resident Evil.
Sure.
I always felt that Silent Hill went more for the psychological horror.
Yeah.
It would do things like, especially in the first game, where one of the more infamous things about Silent Hill 1 was this radio that you carried with you that just had this little bit of static. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like subtle little things like this to make you feel uneasy. Creepy ghost babies coming after you.
Lots
instead
of fog.
Like giant monsters running you or something. And lots of fog, which the PlayStation was very good at. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
That game was kind of popular.
It was a little
huge.
Bit popular, yeah.
That game.
Were any of you in college when this thing came out?
I was. I think I was first year, maybe. And I knew a lot of skater friends, and they loved this game. They would nonstop talk about it, how awesome it is. But I never really played it until it came out on Dreamcast. So different podcast, but yeah. I never played it on PlayStation 1.
Interesting.
Well, it was huge, and I definitely knew it was huge in college dorms because a lot of my friends were huge into this game. I thought, this could not be for me. Mm-hmm. It's a game about skating. People that I know who like skating love it. Yeah. There's no way this could be for me.
You're like, no.
Yep.
Then I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
This game was totally for me.
Yeah. Kind of a weird kind of score chase.
It played
in a way.
So well.
Yeah, it did.
There's so many good hooks of that game. I mean, aside from controls, you know, the soundtrack was great. But just like things like unlocking, you know, new areas of a particular level, shit like that. Game was so good.
And licensed so skaters good. For the time was crazy. Like Bucky Lassiter.
Oh yeah, they did
and,
do licensed
you know,
skaters.
I mean, they didn't have much of it, but the music was pretty good too.
The music, the soundtrack was awesome. This is back in the day when licensed stuff was cool. It was like, this is awesome. It's like got real music, and it was cool. Like they have real like it's an actual sprite ad in the background. That was like, it was like they actually got like you know that's when like gamers are kind of looking at like that meant that games are kind of getting recognition where now that's like frowned upon. It's like real time advertising.
Yeah, we legit now, man.
Yeah, I remember that like first time you see like a Coke ad in like a game or something. Like wow, that's crazy. That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now we come to the year 2000, and take a look at where we started. Sony was completely new to this.
Brand new.
This is their first console. No one knew whether or not this thing was going to succeed. No one had any expectations this was going to be a big hit. And now, in 2000, this was the year that the PlayStation 2 is coming out, and we all remember the hype around that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what a sensation the PlayStation had become. Mm-hmm. And even then, during that year, the year the PlayStation 2 came out and sold out in such a prolific
it
fashion.
It was insane.
The PS1 was still the best-selling console of the year.
And was that when the One came out?
That was when the One came out. Yeah,
yeah.
They had a new, smaller version that was cheaper.
With the LCD screen. I have those two. It's awesome.
I want one of those. I can't find one online for a decent price.
I've got the sick fucking yin-yang lid.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I worked at EB shortly after. I started working at EB Games just before a year into the Xbox came out. So it was about 2 years after PS2. And the PS1s were there, and they were still selling like mad. And I was like, I should have bought one.
Weird story about the PS2 and me. I was working at, was it Software? No, it was GameStop at the time, actually.
Okay.
Right before the PS2 came out. And we were doing pre-orders and shit for it. And there was some shady shit going on. Like, our manager was pushing us real hard to get a shit ton of pre-orders for this. To the point that, like, we knew that we weren't going to get enough to fill all these pre-orders. But we were supposed to tell people that.
Tell people you're
guaranteed a copy. Yeah, launch day. And I didn't do that. Like, I bucked the system, man. I'm like, sorry. You know, you should probably go. If you want it day one, you got to go down the other side of the mall. Sears
like the Santa Claus and Miracle
on
34th
Street. One of the big retail like stores.
But I got let go. I think because
of
that.
Are you serious?
Like, yeah, they stopped. Yeah, they stopped.
Well, fuck you for being honest, Jason.
They stopped scheduling me and shit. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I just got a different job somewhere else.
Mm.
But that came back to haunt me because the person that said that put in like a negative thing in my like GameStop like profile or something
that.
So when I got my job at Game Informer, like a couple of weeks afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, it showed up?
Yeah, it showed up and they're like,
what?
We should not. Yep. They weren't going to like, you know, fire me because
totally
of it.
Be like, yeah.
But had they known about that beforehand, I would have been disqualified.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Because I was trying to be honest about the PS2 presale shit.
Yeah.
God damn it.
I remember that was a huge, huge issue at the time. Like, I was like, you could not buy one for like a long time.
Dude, I got threatened several times. I worked at Walmart in college when the PS2 came out, and so many worried parents came in along with very angry dudes who always wanted to talk to me outside.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a story for another time. We got one last game from 2000. Let's talk about Vagrant Story.
Yes!
A little bit.
Yeah, such a good game.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is one of those games that this is the kind of game I think that they need to do like an HD upgrade to.
I think they do because it's kind of a hidden gem, but it's also very looked at as like a very good game that Square made.
It is so complicated.
It really is hard. Yeah.
Dude, the gameplay systems in this thing are really deep, but they're also really arcane, and it takes a long time to figure out what the hell is happening.
Yeah, they would need to streamline some inventory things.
Why can't I hit this guy for more than zero?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'd have to streamline some of the inventory issues that are in the game.
Can we talk about one more game?
Because you had to switch out weapons so many times because of the different types of enemies. So it was fun though, and it's just hard to go back to. It's hard to go back to PS1 games for me.
They look like. I think that entire generation is pretty hard to go back to be honest with you. Unless it's like a 2D based game.
Yeah.
It's really tough. But I want to talk about. I can mention one more game just because.
Sure. Sure.
Tenchu was
Stealth Assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tenchu
was a game that I played, and I was like, "This game is so amazing, so good." It was like I think it was after Metal Gear, and it was like a fully 3D, like the third person type thing. It was like so good, and I wish they could match that again. They never did. They had a game come up like last generation, which was awful. They need to get back on.
Oh yeah,
The first couple of games were good, but
yeah, Tenchu 1 and 2 were really, really good. I just remember playing that at Buddy's house, and like the stuff you can do in this game was so. It was like because Metal Gear had its like you can kind of do what you wanted to, but Tenchu was way more free flowing.
like there wasn't so much alarm states and stuff like that. You can kind of like go to certain stages of that game and approach it the way you wanted to, and it could still work out in your favor.
Yeah, there's really so many different ways to complete a level. Sure. And
it was mine at the time. I was like, this is amazing. Sorry, I just had to put that in there. Like Tenchu.
No, absolutely.
That's a great one. I got one I want to throw out there too. That's sure. Probably the first console first person shooter I ever played that I was really, really into.
I know what you're going to say.
And it was Disruptor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Disruptor was made by, I think it was it Insomniac's first person shooter. I think it was.
Yep.
And it was, I think the first thing that, what really got me is it seemed like the visual fidelity of this game was so far ahead of everything else that was released on PlayStation at the time. And when I played it and you had the, you know, it was a shooter. So you had your guns and all these futuristic guns and you had these psionic powers as well. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very cool. And, I still have that on my shelf. I'm pretty sure. Was one of the few, first person shooters that I really got into and played to completion. So
I never played it. Do you think it would hold up today?
Probably not, because it also, I don't think it used the DualShock either. So you'd have to go back to the like whole button to strafe.
Like I'm telling you, the first DualShock thing was Halo. Which is crazy.
When it comes to
first
person shooters, the first first person shooter with dual analog was Halo. So you'd be going back
That's weird to think about.
You'd be going back to some rough controls.
On PlayStation 2.
Yeah, and GoldenEye. I mean, think about GoldenEye.
And GoldenEye.
That was only one analog stick.
So. I could not stand the controls in GoldenEye. That's why I never got into Time Splitters.
Oh, really? Yeah. Because
not Time Splitters. GoldenEye sucked.
GoldenEye, now was very, we went at my bachelor party, people were trying to play it at the bar we were at, and it was just, I didn't realize 15 frames per second was acceptable back then. It was so bad. I'm like, how did we play this without throwing up everywhere? Or just like,
that game's gross.
It was really bad. But anyway.
Can you imagine the NeoGAF posts from back then? Oh, I was promised 20 frames per second. This is only 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
That silky smooth 20. It drops below that. Fuck that.
Dude, this little system accomplished so much, especially when you think about the odds that were stacked against it. This is 2015.
Ridiculous.
This is 2015. It's been 10 years since the 360 came out.
They're 3 for 4 in my eyes.
Yeah.
3 for 4 ten, console launches. Like
10 years is a long ass time. If you want to know just how long, think about just what Sony was up against when the PlayStation was released over here in 95. By 95, we'd seen the entire lifespan of the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo. That was the level of market strength that Nintendo held when Sony made its way to the market. And when Nintendo made its fifth generation play, it was a serious play. The N64 was a capable system with some great games released at an aggressive price point. By 95, we were seeing Sega at the height of its popularity, bringing in a new home system at a time when its arcade games were industry-leading.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, these are huge, huge challenges. And after all the setbacks and in the face of all this, I don't know why Sony persisted in bringing the PlayStation to market. But they did, and they were able to capitalize on a lot of mistakes by their competitors. We talked about some of the mistakes Sega had made with the development of the Saturn. Nintendo's insistence on the cartridge format that drove several of the industry's most prominent developers to the PlayStation.
CD and 3D. That was the two ones that basically won it for them, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, you could argue that the success of the PlayStation was also due to competitors having made so many mistakes, being why all the third-party developers ended over there, but it was also the format they chose, the support they provided developers, and ultimately, as they proved... Yeah, and it was like, cheaper.
You said as a joke, for $39.99, this better be a good game. Same time, N64 games are going for like $79.99.
Yeah, dude, Chrono Trigger was that much.
Yeah, exactly. Like they was.
It well,
was,
Chrono Trigger was worth it.
Oh I agree 100%. But you know, people complain right now about $60 games, and it's like, I paid $80 for Chrono Trigger on the Super NES.
My buddy paid $99.99 for Street Fighter 2.
Ouch.
On the Super Nintendo.
You know, gamers go where the games are. That's always been true.
Yep.
Yeah. And the PlayStation emerged from the fifth gen as the victor, despite being Sony's first console, because it had the games. And it had the games to a greater degree than many other systems I can remember. So I'd say that the legacy of the PlayStation to me is that this system stands as a representation that there are no immortals in this business.
Absolutely not.
Sega and especially Nintendo were dominant and had been dominant for the years. But times changed. Both of them made mistakes. and a new dominant player emerged as a result.
Yep.
I did this for the Genesis episodes we did, and I'll do it again here. Each of you, I want you to tell me a game that impacted you during the PlayStation era. A game that you don't think you've seen the like of since.
Hmm.
I think I might go back to Metal Gear Solid. That certainly impacted me heavily. And I've seen a lot of games try and replicate that and never to the same degree.
Including Metal Gear Solid.
I don't even think Metal Gear has done the same thing since Metal Gear 1. But
might be right. You might be right. Just, yeah, they kind of went off the rails in that series. But yeah, Metal Gear Solid, I think, is the one that stands out to me the greatest. I mean, I totally want to throw out Symphony of the Night, but man, I mean, that inspired an entire genre. Mm-hmm. But it's another case of, you know, they still haven't done it as well
as good as that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's mine. Obviously. It should be pretty obvious. And that's the thing. It's like, it's what you said. Symphony of the Night made me a Castlevania fanatic. That is what it made me. I always liked the Castlevania games. It made me a Castlevania fanatic. And they have, just like you said with Metal Gear, they've attempted to replicate that mostly on the DS. Actually, almost all on the on portable systems.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they've never reached that bar. You know, they set that bar so high, and they have yet to reach it. And that's why I'm so excited about Bloodstained, because I'm thinking to myself, this is what could actually do it. This is the one that might actually reach that bar. I'm not saying it will, but if anything is going to, this has the best chance.
Oh shit.
How about you, Jeff?
I'm gonna have to piggyback one on Jason on Metal Gear, just because that was one of the games that was like the killer app for me for PlayStation, and the feeling I got from playing that was way beyond any other Metal Gear I played or any. There's really is at that time or even to this time, it's kind of the only game that plays like it, like at all. Like Splinter Cell's a stealth game, but it doesn't play like Metal Gear. But I think the big one for me. There's been games definitely like it, but Gran Turismo, like I would never play Forza. I would never play Gran Turismo. I would never interest in like Project Cars. Like that game just kind of totally got me into a genre that I never thought I would ever, ever even think of playing. But the games have done that before, so I can't say it's like nothing's been like that, but it definitely turned me onto a genre that I thought I would never even touch, and it started the genre, so I can't really say I wouldn't think about it because that was
a game with unique kind of power. That if I had spent more time with that game, I might have ended up a car guy myself.
I wouldn't consider myself a car guy. I just know my little stuff I know about cars has all come from Gran Turismo and in turn
and Top Gear.
Can I give you guys a trivia question?
Lots of Top Gear. Yeah. Sorry.
Can I give you guys a trivia question?
Yeah.
Sure.
Polyphony made a non-race game for the PlayStation system.
Omega Boost!
Omega Boost!
No.
Hell yeah. That game was so good and so bad all at the same time.
Yes. Wow. It would be the last time they would be allowed to do anything.
That's right. It was the last time they were allowed to do anything but Gran Turismo.
Yeah, and somebody's like, yeah, you know that Gran Turismo thing you did? Keep doing that.
Stick to that.
But release it every 8 years.
That's right.
I think for me, my answer to this question would be Alundra.
That's a good answer.
It was the best Zelda game I'd played since A Link to the Past, and even though it had its own voice. And stylistically and thematically, you know, it's very different from the Zelda that we know today. But I'd honestly rather have another game like this than any of the Zelda games that have been released since this, except for Ocarina. This thing was ethereal, it was dark in places, it had amazing puzzles and dungeons that were super satisfying to complete. It was lengthy, but it didn't overstay its welcome. I freaking love this game.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, were you a female protagonist in that game?
No,
right?
You were male.
No.
Were you a male?
Yeah,
okay.
You were like an elf-like dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, MC, I have a question for you then. Did you play the latest one on 3DS?
What?
The latest Zelda on 3DS.
Zelda, not Alundra.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you almost blew it.
Didn't know about
mind.
That. I was about to shit. A Link Between Worlds. I really liked that game, but The thing is that part of the reason why I like A Link Between Worlds so much is because it builds, it actually builds on the things that worked about A Link to the Past.
Right.
And so many games could not build on that. But at the same time, when you're building on something, you're not providing me with that fresh, original taste that I got from Alundra at the time.
Fair enough.
I need to check out Alundra.
You know, it's,
is that on PSN?
I wouldn't want to compare most games to A Link Between Worlds because it's amazing, but Alundra is one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the game was great.
I'm loving the fact that you're saying that reminds me of Zelda, because I remember as a Genesis dude, I wanted Landstalker to be my Zelda. And when I rented it, I'm like, this is nothing like Zelda at all. There's platforming in it, which is weird. And it was really hard because you couldn't move a camera, but it was kind of like a 3D isometric kind of view.
Yeah.
And it was really tough. I remember that.
Yeah.
But I really liked it.
Well, gentlemen, that is our feature. But we do have some emails, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And I believe Jason is going to read those emails
for
us. Mr.
A. Striker.
I got a whole mess of these things.
You do.
I actually have like two or three or something like that. So
there's four.
First one
just
is
make sure
from,
you get them all.
one, two, three. We'll work it out. All right. All right. I see three. And anyway, Mr. Rob Paris writes and says, hello, one and all. This is Rob Paris writing in.
Hello.
To chime in on the 20th birthday of the original PlayStation. PS1 holds a special place in my heart, partly because it was the first console I bought with my own money.
Mm.
My brother and I went halfsies on one when we were kids, but also because it was the first console where I truly saw the potential of 3D gaming. From having family members play the original Formula One game using a steering wheel for the first time,
oh, wow,
to my amazement when I first saw the opening of Final Fantasy VII, I will always look back on the PS1 with fond memories and nostalgia, whilst being careful to rarely go back and play any of the games on there. Most did not age well at all.
No.
Will we ever see a company debut a console to such a large success? I highly doubt it, but still hope. I highly doubt it, but still hope one day we might. Either way, Sony should be lauded for just how right they got it on their first attempt. Much love as always, Rob Paris.
Thank you, Rob.
I think they got it right.
Dude, Rob's so right. Like before we recorded this, I would not put the PlayStation as like one of my favorite consoles because a lot of those games like really did not age very well.
No,
and,
they don't.
You know, I'm hard pressed to think of, you know, like I don't know if I'd put it as like one of my, you know, deserted island consoles or something like that.
No,
but there was
no,
like the PlayStation was like so important to the industry because it was this little underdog, had no fucking chance, and then all of a sudden just like
dominated.
Completely turned the industry on its head.
Think about
the PS2 is the most sold console in history. Well, maybe the Wii might have that now, but.
No, they, but no, like, you know, I think PlayStation 2 still has it.
Still has it?
Not by much, but it still has it over the DS.
And the Wii honestly doesn't count because like a lot of people bought that shit and never bought a single game.
Well, I don't think the Wii beat it either.
Yeah.
I think PS2 still holds that. But think about it this way. This is kind of the way, one of the things that I think about right now. It's like let's say the PlayStation never came out and the console generation for that was Saturn and N64. Where would gaming be at that point?
In a much better place.
I'm kidding. Not agree at all, sir.
I'm totally kidding. But that's why I hold resentment towards Sony and Microsoft, because like being that Sega guy, and I just refused to go to Nintendo. It was more of a thing between me and my buddy. I couldn't do it until now. I don't care anymore. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like now I have no problem admitting the Super Nintendo was a better console than the Genesis. Whatever. Then I would never ever.
Yeah.
But
those talented people that made those games still existed. And in a world where there was no PlayStation, it's possible that we would have seen Symphony of the Night on Saturn, that we might have seen something like Final Fantasy VII on Saturn. But I will submit to you that I just don't think there would have been games like Parappa the Rapper.
Nope.
Right.
Like Jimmer Lammy.
Nope.
Like Gran Turismo. I don't think that there was a console manufacturer out there that was as willing to take risks.
Oh,
as
especially
Sony.
Not on Sega's side. Sega, like again, read that book. Read Console Wars. Sega of Japan were stingy motherfuckers.
Yeah, Bust a Groove. We didn't talk about that at all. I mean, that was
we should have. Really, 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 really.
And that's
really,
a reputation
really
that they hold to this day.
Yeah. I think they held it from 1 and 2 and 4. Like I think, like I said, that's why I gave Sony 3 out of 4.
Hey, and 3, man. No one else would have made a game like Flower or Journey.
Oh, no, no, no. He's talking about console launches.
I'm talking console launches. Yeah. I think Sony nailed 1, 2, and 4.
3, they dropped the ball. They dropped the ball big time on
Because that was when they went, you know what, fuck third parties, fuck our fan base. Like, they could get two jobs.
That was all arrogance, man.
It was the worst launch like that they could possibly do.
Yeah.
Like, they could have been 4 for 4. Like, I think they've had like 3 pretty much close to perfect launches for console sales and like setting the right message out there.
Yeah.
They just screwed up on 3.
Yeah.
But that's pretty good. That's a pretty good track record for someone who is overall in the last 4 consoles all 4 consoles they've released are number 1. It's pretty good.
Yep. I agree.
Not bad.
Yeah.
You guys down for another email?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It's from Fergus. He says, hey guys, I'm going to share my first memory of playing the original PlayStation.
All right.
The first time the first game I got with the system was Metal Gear Solid. Needless to say, I was blown away by the first use of a fully voice-acted experience that I felt was unparalleled at the time. But I was 9 at the time, and as you can imagine, didn't understand the nuances of the game.
I'm old.
At the time. Also, I didn't know who Hideo Kojima was at the time.
Nobody else did either. That's fine.
Nobody did. Yeah.
I played me some Snatcher. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, but did you know it was Hideo, though? I mean, come on.
There was a particular part of the game early on when you could not progress the game unless you contacted the, spoiler alert, Meryl. Now, at the time, I didn't have the presence of mind to look at the back of the box to find the particular frequency to ring on the codec. So me, being a persistent motherfucker, went through every possible combination of frequency to see what would happen.
Oh, God. Holy crap.
This is hours after backtracking, wondering if I missed something. So I rang Meryl and got some door opened where there were lasers and that if touched, set off an alarm and you got killed instantly by gas. At the time, I didn't know you needed IR goggles to see the beams of light. Could have just smoked, man. That's a lot.
He could do that too. Selection. Yeah, exactly.
So I ran through the particular passage for a few hours, getting killed every time until fate had all the beams, which were going up and down in just the right positions by sheer luck. He blind ran
that part. Wow.
God dang. That experience nearly turned me off of gaming for good, but thankfully the rest of the game was that compelling to my small mind that I forgave it. And still go back to play it periodically. But
awesome.
I'll never forget the frequency, 140.15, or that you need to find out.
He earned that shit.
Yeah, for sure.
All in all, I enjoy the PlayStation and think that games released on that platform continue to influence game design and mechanics to this day. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Keep up good work. Fergus out.
Thanks, sir.
Fergus.
We mentioned several games that started genres.
Everything.
Yeah.
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 That's very true.
And that's why, PlayStation's such an important
console. And it goes back to what MC said. Sony was so willing to let developers do their thing and give in and let them take risks. And I think it changed everything.
I didn't mention it because there's one game that I think maybe I'm the only one that played. But in regards to strange games in the PlayStation that took risks, Deception.
Top Shop. Oh, Deception.
Oh, let me tell you about Deception.
Uh-oh.
I can't. I have nothing to say. No.
super weird fucking game.
Wait, are you talking about the horror game? The one that's like really... It was
Deception.
It depended on how you played it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't think of it as a horror game unless you were a sadistic jackass. You're like, oh man, check it out. This dude's going to come up the stairs and then my spring on the floor is going to propel him upward into these spikes and then he's going to fall down and this electric boulder is going to roll over him. And
we ain't done yet. Here comes the game. Are you speaking from experience here, MC? Did you have a trap like that?
Yeah. Quite a few.
That game was super cool.
Ingenuity for you right there.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have seen that on the N64.
You guys ready for an email from
Dan? Literally, you wouldn't be able to see it on the N64 because there'd be so much fog up in your shit.
Good one, Chorney.
All right, go for it, Jason.
This email's from Daniel. He says, I remember dropping out of my second semester of OAC, which is grade 13 for those of you who have never heard of OAC.
Oh, it's obviously someone from Canada.
So yeah, second semester of OAC in high school, because I knew I was going to college. Since OAC credits were for university, I felt it made more sense to work instead of attending OAC and save up for college, since I was going to be paying tuition all on my own. That makes sense. Anywho, I worked at a McDonald's at the time with a particularly sexy guy named Jeff C.
Oh,
actually, let's just call him G. Shorty.
Okay, yeah.
I was supposed to be very responsible with my money, storing it all away in my bank account so that when September rolled around, I wouldn't have to worry about all the books, tuition, and transportation, etc. That all flew out the window when I got my first huge paycheck. I was so giddy at having so much money that I deposited in my bank account and promptly ran over to the mall to purchase the PlayStation, along with Gran Turismo and Resident Evil 2. Hmm. It was easily the biggest single purchase I've ever made, but hey, so did my love of one of my favorite franchises ever, Resident Evil. It took me about 20 minutes to figure out how to get past those first few zombies. Gotta love the tank controls. but I still love the crap out of that game. Plus, I now write about video games using everything I learned in journalism school, so I would say it all worked out. My only regret is quitting McDonald's, because, come on, I used to get half off every purchase. Signed, Daniel. Jeff, you know this guy?
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. That's funny, because I don't think he listens to the show. I don't know if he listens to the show. He follows me on Twitter, so I just threw out like the whole like PlayStation 20th anniversary thing. So, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. He full does.
Cool. Well, thank you, Daniel, for the email.
Himself. Yeah, thank you.
Speaking of full circles, you guys want an email?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. That was the worst transition.
Yeah,
absolutely horrible segue. Speaking of horrible segues, Mike Penis 08 says, today is what 20 years now since the PlayStation 1 has been released. I remember picking my first PlayStation 1 up from the Toys R Us about 6 months after release date. I still had a Turbo Duo and was playing that more at the time I bought a PlayStation 1. Don't get me wrong, I still play the hell out of the PlayStation 1, and I believe the first games I Mike, we've talked about this.
You can all do right. this, Jason.
What I believe, the first games I bought was Ridge Racer and Beyond RPG, which was fucking terrible. Yes,
was it that bad?
It was that bad.
A lot of people bought
it. It was really not that great.
Yeah.
I purchased mine after being at a friend's house, playing his over and over and over. I did buy other games down the road, such as Metal Gear Solid and Final Fantasy VII. Again, happy 20 years to PlayStation 1 and happy 35-year Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to you guys later. Your buddy, Mike Penis 08.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike Penis.
Thank you.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, Beyond was terrible. Ridge Racer was not.
I remember that game was like popular. I remember like working at Electronics or EB, and we had so many copies of that because I just figured
which one Beyond game. The Beyond.
And then people told me it was shit. That's why I thought Eco was shit, because we had a shitload of copies of Eco.
Oh no! Can't really? Be good.
Eco was great.
Lot, yeah.
Did you hold off on Eco?
I did, because I just figured.
Oh man, Eco
everybody
was, great.
Was, that was a trading this game in because it was garbage. That's because like
don't sound forget, Canadian luck.
don't forget, I took a big hiatus from video games from like somewhere like, well, the Dreamcast didn't have a long lifespan, but somewhere between like a year after the Dreamcast was released till a year after PlayStation 2 was released, I didn't even follow a game. I was like, you know what, fuck this shit. Like, nothing's coming up for Dreamcast. I don't give a shit. I can't afford PlayStation 2. I don't care about the Xbox. Fuck it. So I didn't even care. And then eventually I started caring again and then worked at EB, and there's a bunch of copies of this game coming in. So I just figured it was a garbage game because everyone was trading it in. And then I found out like years later that, oh my God, the game's so good.
I was like, it was really good.
Yep.
All right.
Well, hats off to you, Sony, for making it through that gauntlet of adversity and coming out with an amazing library on the other side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the PlayStation 1. I am grateful to this system for getting me back into gaming after a period where I thought I might be out.
There you go.
But the sheer variety and quality of the games on this thing pulled me in.
Nice.
Yep. I'm with you there. I didn't actually go through like the hiatus because I was working at a game store, but my hiatus came later, like between like the end of the PS2 and the start of the PS3. Like I didn't get a
PS3's 360 era.
Yeah, so like I didn't get a 360 until a year after it released. So that year between the 360 release and when I actually got PS3. One, that was kind of my hiatus. And I didn't get a PS3 until like 6 months after it launched. So
yeah,
But
well, yeah. I mean, it was like $1,800. So
right.
Yeah, and that's a lot of money to pay to play Resistance.
That's right, and Ridge Racer 6 or whichever one.
Yeah,
it was.
That's right. Yeah, 7.
7.
But
no. 5.
No one's keeping tabs.
I don't know.
Which is also just 6 with another extra track.
By Lisa to get a PS3.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. Hey, you know what? I got it done.
Hey,
shut up.
I got married to Tiny to get a fucking crock pot. Yeah, you did. So. We have some interest questions here really quick.
Oh, wow.
Literally, okay. It's literally only 2.
Okay.
From Jaw Muncher.
Yo.
That's someone, Chris and I know from GLF. Yep. He says, mention Dino Crisis.
Oh, Dino Crisis. Yeah.
So we just did.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we fucked up. We should do it over.
No, we just mentioned it now.
Yeah.
So
we have mentioned Dino Crisis. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Good, good.
And that's it for the ones that are related to the feature.
Oh, okay. All right.
Dino Crisis was a thing.
It was.
The third one's the best. What up?
Is that the one in space?
You. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, it's the one.
There's a Dino Crisis in space? What?
Yeah, yeah.
I did not know that. I did not know
it was
that's
an
what
Xbox we're exclusive at the time. It was god-awful.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's funny. All right, cool. Well, let's move on. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions, and thank you, MC, for that very well-structured feature. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. That was fun.
Is there like a 21st anniversary or something we can do? Like, next week?
Well, you know, that means if we just did 20 years for the PlayStation, that means that, you know,
5 years.
15 years for the Dreamcast is probably coming out pretty soon. Actually, this is 15 years for the Dreamcast.
Mm. 16, yeah.
16
well,
years,
we can
you're
pretend
right,
it's 15. Or we can just round up from 16 and say 20.
That's right.
Or we could just talk about PSO for 2 hours.
There you go. We can talk about PSO for 2 hours.
That's dude, awesome.
That's pretty much what the show would be.
That would be my defining moment of Dreamcast.
All right. Let's do some new releases. Next week for the PS4, we are getting Roundabout. Badland.
For the, which system?
Cool. PS4?
PS4.
Oh, PS4. Okay.
Badland Game of the Year edition? Was there was Badland a Game of the Year last year?
It was technically released last year, so okay.
It's Badland.
It's coming out for all PlayStation systems. Octodad Deadliest Catch is hitting the Vita. Magicka 2 is hitting PS4. Ultra Street Fighter 4 is coming for PS4.
I can use this.
God, they just
right
keep
here.
Releasing that game. That's terrible.
I don't hear those buttons.
It's only 30 bucks, like right? Isn't it only just 30 bucks?
Yeah, that's $25.
25? That's
more.
Awesome.
Oh, that's even worse. Yeah. Oh, geez. I'm probably not going to buy that.
Yeah. Arcade Archives Crazy Climber. That's coming for PS4. Yeah. Arcade Archives Ninja Kid is also for PS4.
What the fuck are you reading off now?
I'm just reading
now
the list.
You're just making shit up.
Yeah, dude. I'm making shit up. That's what I do. Invisimals, The Resistance is coming for
Invisimals?
Vita. Invisimals.
Is that a Vita port? Oh, it's an actual Vita game.
I think it's an actual Vita game, yeah.
Do you remember that came out on the PSP with a camera attachment?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Did it?
God damn.
It was a horrible game. It was absolutely bad. Weird Park, The Final Show, is coming out for PS3.
It's called Down the Street.
What? These are obscure games. I don't know where these are coming from.
All right.
Guilty Gear XX Core Plus R is for PC.
Yeah.
Mega Man 8 Anniversary Edition is a PS1 classic hitting PS3. PS Network for PS3. Don't Starve Giant Edition is hitting Wii U. Serpent in the in the Staglands is coming out for Steam on all platforms. Splatoon is next week for the Wii U. The Fruit of Grigia is coming out for Steam. That looks weird. And Legend of K Anniversary is coming out for Wii U, PS4, and PC.
I'm kind of interested in that.
The PS2 game was pretty good.
Yeah. That was not bad. That was an okay game.
It was
game,
an okay seriously. Game. It was like one of those.
Yeah, that was a pretty good 3D platformer.
3D kind of almost Zelda-ish kind of platformer. Yeah. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm. But pick of the week.
Pick of the week.
My pick of the week's going to have to be Splatoon.
Okay.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I have a feeling that I'm not going to play that game that much, but I think it's going to be a good game.
I feel like that game is a little light on content for what they're asking.
It might be. Is it $60? I mean,
it's
if
$60
it plays
bucks.
Super well.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of people like really, really like this game. So,
and it's just so unusual to see Nintendo make a game like this where A, it's a new IP, and B, they specifically are soliciting games like this from younger developers.
Sure.
Like, they've got a kind of like a program over at the Tokyo Development Studio to solicit ideas and encourage stuff like this. And so it's something I want to see more of. And it itself looks pretty interesting.
I like supporting that. So,
I'd go Splatoon or Roundabout, because Roundabout is so stupid, dumb, and fun. It is so stupid, but it's so fun.
Oh, Roundabout.
It is. Yeah. Just, yeah, it's dumb. You like full motion video.
Yep.
And really stupid game mechanic. It's really fun.
I don't even know anything about this game. I want to look this up now.
It was on PC and Xbox One.
Was it?
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Look it up. It's so dumb. You're controlling a limousine that's constantly spinning in a clockwise direction. And you have to navigate yourself around obstacles. Yeah, just watch a video. But every cutscene is full motion video of like these terrible actors that have also been
and like the best kind. Like it's super cheesy, bad production
like
quality.
Straight up on purpose B grade.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Really
that's
bad.
That's awesome.
And there's a lot of cameos from other indie game developers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, there's a lot of inside jokes going on.
Is Billy Dee Williams in it?
I would hope so. But
yeah, I think he might be.
I have yet to see him.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's really weird.
My pick of the week, outside of Ultra Street Fighter 4, I would say if you've never played Mega Man 8, go get it.
My obvious one is Street Fighter 4.
Yeah, that's obvious. But
that's a given. You don't have to.
If you haven't played Mega Man 8, go try it out. It's pretty good.
Isn't Mega Man 8 the one with the terrible voice acting?
Probably, no, but, you know.
Oh, Dr. Wily.
It was the new one with the hand-drawn graphics coming out on Sega Saturn and PlayStation.
Yeah. It was the PlayStation 1 one.
Yeah.
But it did have terrible voice acting.
It might have. I don't remember. I probably blocked that out of my mind if that was the case.
Huh. It was the first return to form for Mega Man, I guess, on that generation of consoles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right.
We have one interesting question.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
This comes from Mike PSN 08. He says, this is a fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no. Let's move on.
Chun-Li.
Oh, jeez.
Princess Zelda. And Maria from the Double Dragon movie.
I would marry all of them in a heartbeat.
Maria from the Double Dragon movie.
I don't even know who Maria from the Double Dragon movie is. Yeah, so I'd probably get rid of her.
Yeah, so that's a kill. Marry Zelda.
I wouldn't marry Zelda because she keeps disappearing. So
she's tough to keep track of. Sure.
Yeah, but you know what? She eventually learns how to take care of herself.
It's true, but she's still everywhere. I'd marry Zelda.
Who was the other one? Chun-Li? Okay, yeah. Yeah, Chun-Li's definitely my fuck.
Yeah. No one wants to hear me answer this one.
Yes, we do. We asked it. Go for it.
Nah, Chun-Li for everything.
Chun-Li for everything? Yeah, was there going to kill everyone?
You want to kill her too?
Yeah. I wonder who Maria... Now I need to look up who Maria from Double Dragon the movie is, because I remember the movie was being... That was fucking awful.
Is that Alicia Milano?
I think it was Alicia Milano.
I just remembered she was in... That movie.
Yeah, she was. That totally changes up my shit. Well,
Alyssa
Milano's really
pretty high.
To go back there, so.
DB.
Yeah. I think it might have been her.
All right. Why don't we look this up after we wrap up the show?
Yeah.
All right. So next week, guys. Hey, Jeff, do you want to go ahead and talk about E3 next week?
Yeah.
All right.
What are we doing for E3?
Well,
next week?
You said you wanted to do some E3 predictions. You want to do that?
Yeah,
next
I may
week?
As well, because I guess E3 is like the week later.
Well, it's like the following week. So it would release on the 1st. If I actually got it done in time.
Let's do E3 predictions. Let's keep it simple, though. The main three. Oh, and the main two.
Jason, when is E3?
The 15th.
Yeah,
15th is when it starts.
E3 is the 17th.
So we'd be a couple weeks. We'd be a couple weeks early.
Let's do it the week before, then.
Okay, we'll do it the week before.
Yeah.
I might have to duck out of that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, because you might know.
No, that's fine. We're not gonna. I wasn't gonna put you in a position to be uncomfortable for that. So,
all right.
So we'll come up with something for next week, hopefully, and we'll let you guys know. But if you guys want to send us some emails, you can definitely do that. We appreciate all the emails that we got today and every other show. That address is email@interactivedistractions.com. You send us a voicemail as well. That number is 706-760-4337.
Just keep going.
Follow us on Twitter. We are Indus Podcast or Indus Questions. You can follow us individually as well. We are Indus Chris, Unistrike, and Indus Geoff.
As G-E-O-F.
And MC, what's your Twitter?
Nijhazer. Nijhazer.
So follow him too. Check us out on Facebook, Google+, Steam, or Stitcher. Search for Interactive Distractions and you will find us. And don't forget to go over to VG Evo and join the community and find some people to game with. And that is all I have. Does anybody else have anything before we wrap up?
Thank you so much for inviting me.
MC, dude, thank you for coming on, man.
I've been looking forward for this for a long time.
That's
always a pleasure.
Yeah, we're glad. We're just happy that we were finally able to get you on the show. So we'll definitely do it again in shorter amount of time. It won't take us.
I would love to.
It won't take us 7 years to do it next time.
Maybe one day we'll bring back IndusFest. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh man.
West Coast IndusFest.
East Coast IndusFest.
Indus West?
Indus West. Hey, let's just go to Denver. Oh, sorry. It's a kind of a midpoint, right? That works?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Sure, why not?
I love doing these retrospectives, though.
Yeah, I like these. I like these.
It's an awful lot of fun talking about like.
Of course, we end up with 3 hour shows.
So much to us,
but
well, whatever. Yeah. But they're.
But that's okay. It's okay. It's 3 hours of good stuff. Great. Well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please tell a few friends about us. And if you're on iTunes or Stitcher, leave us a review. We'd appreciate that.
Cool.
So until next time, my name is Chris.
Jason.
MC here next.
I'm MC Wilson.
I'm Jeff.
Play your games, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.